for the killing of 17 unarmed Palestinians during a demonstration at the Gaza-Israel border, where over 1,400 people were injured. Israeli soldiers, tanks and snipers fired live munition at the crowd on Friday in the first of the daily demonstrations to be held between now and mid-May to protest the continuing Israeli occupation. A fence separated the soldiers from the demonstrators. The dead included farmers, students, artists, fathers, sons and loved ones. This year is the 70th anniversary of what the Palestinians call the Nakba, or disaster, when their land was taken. Tens of thousands gathered for the protest. Unmanned Israeli drones hovered over the demonstrators and sprayed them with tear gas. There were children among the injured. Israeli Defense Minister Avigdor Lieberman said the soldiers deserve a medal for protecting the border. Military sources claim 10 of the people killed were members of Hamas, the governing Islamist group in the Gaza Strip. Hamas said 5 of the dead were members of its armed wing. On Sunday, Palestinians observed a day of mourning while hundreds of demonstrators, a fraction of the original crowd, remained in tent encampments along the 40-mile border.
And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
They're looking for some kind of direction. And so Mark Kessler has decided to provide them with that direction by starting the 3% group. And that is a paid militia that he is going, a professional militia, I should say. Now, normally when something goes pro, the people involved in it get paid. In this case, no, you will actually pay him for the, I guess, the benefit of being involved in his militia.
And
you
can pay the 3% is named for the colonists who rose up against George III.
Yeah, but that has no significance whatsoever here. So you can pay $15 a month to be a support personnel, like a medic, I suppose, or $25 a month to be a boots-on-the-ground member. And he's selling T-shirts. One of them apparently says, "Liberals take it in the ass" on the back. That is true in some cases. Not in all cases, okay? I think you shouldn't be as vague with your T-shirts as you are.
Lots of people do, of all political stripes. And that's totally fine.
It sounds like an expression of wish fulfillment on his part.
Yeah, totally.
I didn't realize there was this psychosexual undercurrent to his insanity.
No, he constantly talks about that. I mean, he's always talking about, oh, liberals, ass, oh, God,
it's
ass
about blowjobs and anal sex. Yeah. It's always gay stuff with him.
Right. No. As soon as I saw that, look, a part of me loves this guy, right, because he's such a character and so over the top, ridiculous, etc., right, that I'm entertained by him. Of course.
Plus, it's nice to be wanted.
Exactly. And of course, the larger part is that what John points out. I'm afraid that this guy is dangerous, and he's now riling up other people to be dangerous in his stupid ass militia. But they're so stupid, they just give him money so that he can go shoot someone. I don't know. Like, I don't see the point of the militia. Yeah. Like, if you got together to do something, but here he says, because he knows it would get him in a lot of trouble, the point of this is not to do a revolution, okay? Yeah. If anybody is actually going to try to do an armed revolution, we're against you, right?
So well, what is, why are they giving you
right.
that?
Why and why is it called the 3% then?
Yeah, so he's lying, right? But then the third point is, I've seen one too many times this guy's declared that liberals take it in the ass for me not to think that there's some fascination with asses that he's got. Mm-hmm. I mean, I read it and I was like, oh, it's done. And I, you know, part of me doesn't like saying it because I feel bad associating gay people with scumbags like this, right? Yeah. But there's something there, man. There's definitely some fascination that goes beyond.
Yeah, but I mean, you feel bad associating straight people with this. I feel bad associating white people with this. Hat wearers.
Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro. That's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you speak? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginal.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
A lucky stars above, but not for me. With love to lead.
Emergency 911, this is Dr. Lyons, being recorded.
I'm listening to I want to let you know I'm in Orlando and I did the shooting.
What's your name?
My name is, I pledge of allegiance to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi of the Islamic State.
Well, you need to know that they need to stop bombing off Syria and Iraq. The U.S. is collaborating with Russia, and they're killing innocent women and children, okay?
I hear what you're saying.
My homeboy, Tamerlan Sarnaev, did his thing on the Boston Marathon. My homeboy, Munir Abu Salha, did his thing, okay? So now, it's my turn, okay?
Yet it is now clear he was attracted to gay men and gay nightclubs, including the very place he would target for his suicide attack, The Pulse, where employees and patrons said he was a regular, often seen cheering on the performers in drag. Mateen's interest in gay men goes back at least 10 years, yet somehow Mateen, a Muslim, was drawn to ISIS, which preaches that homosexuality is punishable by death.
Internet radio for smart
Aboriginal radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from even occupied North America. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, Salaton and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, the Angry Indian, Editor-in-Chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the people of the Fourth World from aboriginalnewswire.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com, as well as our main news portal, ang-newswire.blogspot.com. And along with my co-executive producer and master studio engineer, Ms. Guadalupe Morales, we welcome you back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, the official broadcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service, coming straight at you from Everyman Studios in unceded Chinook and Peoples Territories, North America. Yeah, you know, a couple of things to start off with. Apologize. You know, and really, it does should be once a fortnight that we release these dispatches, because that's just where it seems to be going. And I apologize to Radio Free Kansas and Radio Free Berkeley. No, I'm sorry, Berkeley Liberation Radio and all of the other podcasts. Chiampa, thank you for carrying this broadcast. Chiampa Radio, you can get the links at aboriginalradio.wordpress.com. Say that again, aboriginalradio.wordpress.com. You'll find the links to all of our, affiliates, homies, you know, people who want to hear a different opinion, people want to hear what indigenous people have to say that are not necessarily within a particular paradigm, right? Because not everybody's from the plains, right? Yeah, not everybody's native and white. Some of us are native and something else. Right? You know, okay. Where do I go today? Well, I don't know. I mean, when we talked about this a couple of days ago, right? You know, there was a few things that we were going to fucking talk about. The main thing we were going to talk about was this whole, what the fuck is it with this love affair with Russia? You know, it's like, you know, there's so many points now where the radical left and the motherfucking radical right in the United States, in the UK, I mean, in the Anglophone world, you know, they've always met any goddamn way to me. You know, I mean, that's why they say, well, why do you have a black church? Well, we weren't allowed into the white churches. Oh. Why do you have to have a black socialism? Well, I've never heard that before. I mean, well, actually, I've been hearing about it. But when I ask black people who find themselves as socialists or even communists, you know, they don't discuss this. And, you know, my beef with communism is the same beef that the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense had. You know, their, race and, race is unscientific any goddamn way. But, you know, ethnicity, racism is an issue of capitalism as far as the hardline, especially the Trotskyists, right? You know, that's their whole thing. Race should be ignored, which, you know, in some senses, that's cool. But then at the same time, you know, the whole history of an ethnicity, heritage, and that kind of thing, you know, is totally negated. And in many cases, racism is negated in and of itself because it's not, you know, it's only related to the class struggle, in terms of how certain people are oppressed, in terms of the class struggle, in terms of how you're oppressed as an African, as how you're oppressed as an indigenous person native to North America, or as an indigenous person in Africa. You know, that, I mean, that's one of the reasons why African socialism, and that's why, you know, we're saying here, African socialism. You know, there is such a goddamn thing, because, Africa's Africa. It has a completely different history than Europe. You know, Karl Marx was a German. And yes, he was a Jew, you know, from Germany, which is one of the reasons why, you know, some of you knuckleheads out here, I don't fucking get it. You know, you Illuminati fucking fools. Well, fuck it. You know what? Let's just go here. Yeah. Let's just go here. You know, hold up. Look, let's just go here with that, because, you know, really, that's one of the things I was going to talk about in relation to this whole Russia bit. What the fuck is up with folks, man? You know, look at everything for what it is. I mean, I'm trying to be objective, but people tell me I'm not being objective. But then when I'm listening to them, the fuck if they're being objective? You know, what the fuck is it now when I'm hearing black left-wing radicals? You know, this is how they define themselves. In the United States, you know, who are telling me that, you know, the worst thing happening in the world right now is the Russophobia in terms of ethnic hatred against Russians. And I didn't say a fucking thing. I let this cat talk for about 13, 14 minutes. And I'm saying it like that because I was looking at my watch. I was looking at my watch. And he's just going on and on about how, you know, black people in America, if we had organized, you know, against, you know, on a unified thing. So, you know, okay, he's drawing me in because he knows my politics, right? And blah, 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 blah. And then he starts slipping over to the Skripal poison. Which, you know, if you've seen what I talk about on Twitter, at the Angry Indian on Twitter. Look, I'm pretty fucking clear. I think Russia did it. I think Russia did it. Am I saying that I know goddamn for certain that Russia did it? Well, no. Because this is intelligence, ladies and gentlemen. You know, and you got people who have won fucking awards for writing books and shit. You know, is it fair for me to say that they're millennials? Yeah, they have to be. They're fucking younger than me, right? Way younger than me, right? And yeah, you know, I want to correct somebody on the air. Because, you know, somebody was like, oh, you know, oh, you got a beef with Jeremy Scahill. You know, see, what is it with black activists? Everything has got to be beef. You know, why can't you just have a fucking discussion or have a goddamn disagreement? See, you know, when motherfuckers want to call me an Uncle Tom and what have you, yeah, it's a lot easier to fucking deal with white folks in that sense. Because, you know, there's bullshit there. But it's not that type of bullshit. Everything's got to be fucking macho, stand in the goddamn schoolyard, whatever the fuck, or some other yard, and nobody wants to back down. You know, I don't have time for that bullshit. I understand you young motherfuckers got a lot of vinegar and testosterone, you know, pumping through your fucking veins and shit, and there's such a thing as testosterone poisoning. I wish I came up with that, but it's not mine. You know, there is such a thing as testosterone fucking poisoning. And you need to recognize it. You need to recognize it when it makes itself motherfucking evident. And I'm telling you, folks are jumping on ideological fucking bandwagons where they think they know what the fuck they're talking about. And really, they're just parroting what the fuck they heard from somebody else. Now, it sounds, yeah, I'm going to go on a bunch of tangents, you know, rolling. What I'm talking about here is, you know, I'm running into, you know, a lot of black folks. A lot, who consider themselves to be informed, who consider themselves to be, some of them say that they're radicals, right? The majority of them claim to be on the left, or, you know, they play the punk role and they claim to be libertarian, while ignoring all of the fucking racism and shit from Rand, Ron Paul, from all that shit you hear on the Genesis goddamn network, right? I mean, there's so many black folks, man, who get the majority of their fucking, just like Trump. And that's the whole thing. You know, it's like a lot of motherfucking people are sounding just like him. But because they didn't get the information directly from him, it doesn't, you know. And what did one motherfucker, a lot of motherfuckers have been telling me on Twitter, because, you know, I don't fuck with Facebook. You know, the rest of you who are getting fucked with that, man, hey, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, baby. You know, I told you. There was just something about Facebook from the beginning when I looked at what was going on that just didn't... It didn't seem right to me. And we know that the fucking... The Central Intelligence Agency pumped about what? Anywhere from 60 to 40% of its initial goddamn funding, right? So, no. You know, I mean, why? Well, why would they do that? There's such a thing as, you know, open source intelligence, right? You know, a lot of your hackers, you know, or people familiar with hacking, familiar with Anonymous, you know, they kind of understand what that term means. But, you know, they don't really think in terms of human intelligence. They don't really think in terms of why wouldn't they back financially? You know, I mean, first off, you know, like a whole lot of motherfuckers that claim to be so goddamn knowledgeable. Yeah, National Endowment for Democracy. We've talked about it here, if not the last broadcast, the broadcast before. It was the broadcast before? Okay, yeah, because I know I brought it up recently. Lupe's saying I brought it up a few times, right? Yeah, no, I have. But because, no, I get these people who consider, again, who consider themselves to be fucking radical, who will tell me some bullshit about, yeah, well, you know, you're okay with George Soros and he's down with the National Endowment for Democracy. Look, man, George Soros is a motherfucking capitalist. He's out to make money. He's out to make money. But obviously his politics don't motherfucking go that way. So, I mean, if you're going to knock him, then you might as well knock Michael Moore, the director. and just take all the shit that he's been doing and just throw it out the window. Just throw it all away. Because, you know, I mean, he makes all of his fucking films through the mainstream media. And all you fuckers in your little hip-hop universe and shit who believe that Jay-Z and Beyonce are gods, well, hey, who the fuck are they making their money with? Who are they sitting at tables with? How much are they worth? You know, give me a fucking break. You know, George Soros is out here. Yo, who is pumping that bullshit? David Duke, or what that Nazi telling me, Lupe, right? It's Dr. David Duke. Yeah, okay, whatever. Where did he get his fucking degree anyway? Slovakia? Somewhere in Eastern Europe, because he didn't get it in the United States. He didn't get his doctorate in the United States. You know, he lived in Europe for quite a while, and he kept getting bumped out of fucking countries in Western Europe. So then he went east, and then he got bumped out of there. So when they finally got tired of his ass with the EU, that's the only reason why he's back in the United States. He was doing his podcast and shit out of cafes in Europe. How do I know this? Because I was listening to him. I still listen to the motherfucker. I listen to them. Not the way many of these fucking black lefties who are following the white lefties who are so fucking pissed with Clinton. Or, you know, they're like Jill Stein and they want their own little motherfucking universe. So, you know, I mean, how is it that these people who are into all these fucking conspiracy theories, Lupe, Jill Stein is sitting there with all of the fucking people that are connected to all of this Russian shit. Oh, there was no goddamn Russian hack. You keep hearing that on Black Agenda Report, right? As far as I'm concerned, Black Agenda Report has no fucking credibility any longer. Not after this. Not after this, because they've been on and on and on and fucking on. And have actually had, what was it, don't even pull it up, because we do have the web pages, right? The cat that ran with Jill Stein, her co-president, whoever, you know, his wannabe, her wannabe co-president. I didn't mean to say his in terms of Jill Stein, that was a mistake. No. Dig what I'm saying here. I follow his account on Twitter, you know, and I've been listening to him for quite a while. And he's come up with a bunch of bizarre bullshit, and so is Jill Stein. And what kills me is the conspiracy theorists that can't stand George Soros, they're okay with Jill Stein, even though Jill Stein has the same sort of motherfucking corporate oil and goddamn big international corporate vampire fucking company. Multinational corporation. Her and her husband have those same goddamn investments. And Black Agenda Report, Democracy Now even, none of them are questioning that. I mean, you know, they might mention, well, let me see. I think Democracy Now, let me be fair, Amy Gilman or Lameen Sheikh or whoever it is on there had actually mentioned that. And, you know, as usual, or asked her that question. And as usual, Stein gave some fucking, you know, emotional tirade about how everybody hates her and you know, other people own all kinds of shit and it doesn't have anything to do with what she's saying. And then there was the microwave bullshit, and then she was talking about vaccines. I mean, she had said some bizarre bullshit that sounds exactly like who? Like what? What you see on Fox. What you see on the Pizzagate goddamn forums. What you hear Trump tweet after he has seen or heard the shit on Fox fucking News. Or after he has sat with somebody who he believes in, like Alex Jones. Alex Jones is a fucking nutcase. But how many black people will quote Alex goddamn Jones, Luke? How many? How many? You know, with the last time I went to Philly, well, the last two times it was pretty goddamn bad, but the last time was not good at all, you know, because, people were fucking quoting Alex Jones to me chapter and verse. And when I said to them, he said that the Trayvon Martin case was a hoax, that Trayvon Martin never fucking existed, that all of this was a false flag, they're like, oh, I don't believe it. Then I show them on YouTube the goddamn video. Man, you know, maybe the Illuminati made this. I'm not fucking kidding. At what point do black people, as a black person, at what point do we draw a fucking line? Now, you know, and folks, you know, like, I don't like the shit that you say, man. You know, oh, we're going to get it together, man. But, you know, motherfuckers like you, you're just talking disunity. I'm like, okay, so then what's the program? What delegates do we have? What platform are we under? What's on the platform? Is there a plebiscite? You know, you say, you know, they don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. What are we going to do with agriculture then? With what you're talking, you know, they're just looking at me like, oh, fuck you. You know, it's like, well, fuck you too. You know, and then of course, you know, one thing leads to a fucking other, right? Because they're full of shit. They just want to be kings. They just want to be in charge. You know, they're no different than Trump is what the fuck I'm trying to say. He is up there doing absolutely fucking nothing. They're having meetings without this motherfucker. Okay? This is a fact. They're having fucking meetings and conferences where they don't goddamn invite him because they're saying, and this is in the left wing, well, I hate to say left wing, but the progressive, liberal, whatever the fuck it's supposed to be, because these terms, as Noam Chomsky has said, don't mean anything anymore. But sometimes people can be wrong. I like Professor Noam Chomsky. He's correct on shit like that, but he's backing Assange. Assange is a motherfucking dangerous son of a bitch. Haven't you guys figured out what the fuck is going on? He's giving money to Ron Paul. I suppose he's giving money to Rand Paul too. I'd have to look it up. Or we'd have to look it up. You know. But I assume he's a libertarian. He's an Australian libertarian. Right? Which in and of itself, who gives a fuck? You know? I mean, I've admitted on this show some years back that when I first registered to vote, I registered as a libertarian. And I'll tell you why. Because there was Michael Harrington's Socialist Party, right? But they didn't have a goddamn office or base where I was anyway in Philly. That meant I'd have to go over to White Philly. And I couldn't go over to White Philly, right? So, fucking... You know, but not for that or for any goddamn reason. You know, not at that time anyway. And fucking, you know, I just looked for a platform that seemed like it made sense. So, you know, they talked about freedom and the Constitution and shit like that. And yeah, you know, I told you, I was raised by conservatives. They were not white. I mean, when you see Alan Keyes, when you see fucking Ben Carson, I mean, you know, politically speaking, that's where my immediate motherfucking family was at. Not my extended fucking family, but my immediate fucking family. Conservatives. So, you know, I mean, and I was raised Catholic. You know what I'm saying? It's like, don't, you know, I keep trying to explain to folks. I've been on all sides with this shit. You know, I was raised to, you know, believe in UFOs and ghosts. And fucking hates what should I tell you about Luke yesterday? You know, down in the Carolinas where my family's from, the idea is you take a dead snake and you drag it around the house three times, you know, everybody in the house would die within like a period of time. You know, I mean, I was raised with all of this shit. I got an altar in my goddamn house. You know what I'm saying? I'm still Gullah. You know, what the fuck, man? Despite how the fuck I look. You know? The black Indian shit is on both sides of my fucking family. But I'm just trying to tell you. You know, this whole thing about liberal or conservative and white versus black. Y'all need to motherfucking get a goddamn grip. You know, Alan Keyes ain't white. And he's done damage to us by the fucking, you know, bullshit that he's put out here. Ben Carson is trying to motherfucking kick all goddamn people of color and all poor white folks out of goddamn public housing. At the same time, while he and his wife are goddamn picking some of the most expensive fucking furniture that can be found on the international fucking market. Not even the American fucking market. That motherfucker went to Italy and Spain to get his shit. So, you know, it's like, nah, man, come on. I can't criticize Ben Carson because he's a brother. Come on, man. Same thing with Farrakhan. Farrakhan has been on Alex Jones' show how many goddamn times? Alex Jones is hooked up with how many motherfucking neo-Nazis? They're talking about the white genocide. InfoWars, Paul Joseph Watson. All they do is push conspiracy theories. They get black people killed. But you ask a Hotep motherfucker, oh, well, hey, you know, Alex Jones is okay. And I don't know how most of you motherfuckers can still be down with the Nation of Islam. They're doing Scientology. I just said here not too long ago, three quarters of my fucking family is in the goddamn Nation of Islam. On my father's side of the family, right? So, everybody who's not in the South, pretty much, is in the motherfucking Nation of Islam. So, and they've raised their children this way. And they married Muslim women or women who are willing to convert to the discipline of the temple. So it's like, what the fuck? How the fuck do you guys... I still recommend, and I've mentioned this, I don't know how many goddamn times, every black man in the world needs to read Message to the Black Man from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, peace be upon him. Yes, was he a radical, blah, blah, blah? Yeah, he was. But he was pointing out what was going on with the black man at the time and how psychologically we got so goddamn fucked up. I mean, like I said, I was baptized and raised Catholic. You can motherfucking... I'm an atheist. I've been down with Buddhism most of my motherfucking adult life, which is not a religion. But I've also read Mein Kampf. That doesn't make me a fucking Nazi. It's like you got to fucking open your fucking mind. Understand something. In order to understand something, you got to fucking look at it. I get people who condemn shit all the fucking time. And it's like, do you know what the fuck you're talking about? And a lot of the time, they don't know what the fuck they're talking about. And it's like, well, I would never look at it. I would never read that. Well, then how are you complaining about it if you haven't actually looked at it already? Well, but just because. Well, so basically then you're defining your prejudice by ignorance. Oh, you calling me ignorant? I'm saying you're operating on ignorance. And you know how it is. And then one motherfucking thing leads to another because it then becomes personalized. Because they have nowhere else to fucking go. They have nowhere else to go. And, and I've said this before. It's really a whole lot of bullshit that motherfucking, And yeah, I was going to start off with this, Luke, remember? Didn't even fucking get around to it. I was on my way in here today, and I was listening to a couple, I try to listen to as many black podcasts as I can, and it's really getting hard. Because I tell you why, these two young guys, apparently they got 10,000 downloads for this shit. They were basically dissing the fuck out of Obama. Now, look, I have my own fucking, ebook out there about Obama. African Judas. You can go down and check it out and download it for your fucking self, man. AboriginalWriter.wordpress.com. I mean, it's there. But I wasn't going after him personally. I defend him as a black man when he's facing racism and shit. But no, I was against his fucking policies. But they were just ripping him a new motherfucking rectum, man. Okay, fine. Go ahead and do that. I mean, everybody knew he was a goddamn assimilationist when they fucking voted for him, and they were coming after him and talking about, this black Muslim underground that was working, he created ISIS, and they were gonna kill all the white people. And, and there were a lot of hoteps out there that were hoping that shit was true. They were hoping that there was some kind of fucking plan. Like, remember that black Indian sister I was telling you about, Lou? That she was, she stopped talking to me. Right? She stopped talking to me. She broke off our friendship because I criticized, General Colin Powell for fucking lying, basically, at the United Nations about the Iraq thing. And, which he did. He was saying word for word. I mean, pretty much verbatim. A British university student's paper. That was their thing. I mean, they lied about everything. And we know this now. Nobody's facing, international fucking jurisprudence because of this. But I'm just saying, we know this now. The general fucking educated public who can read a goddamn newspaper, understands this now. Okay. So she got pissed with me because, I should be supporting him because he's black, even though he's a Republican and even though he's part of this fucked up, scheme and this, that, and the other. And I'm like, no, I can't. And then she was telling me, how do you know he doesn't have a plan? How do you know? And you know how it is when you argue with some people. They're just like, oh, well, how do you know? And in our community, you know how it goes. How do you know? I can shout you down. So that means I'm right. No, it doesn't, actually. You're entitled to your own fucking opinion. You're not entitled to your own facts. And that's just the what it is. You know, like I said, when you hear motherfuckers, you know, people are angry with me, black people are angry with me. Oh, you can't get down on people who, you know, who are flat earth believers because, you know, I said, what? Do you believe it? No. Well, then why do you fucking care that I think that these people, because, you know, somebody on Twitter got mad about that. I think they're fucking mentally goddamn insane. There is no motherfucking, there's no reason to believe. There is no logical fucking reason to hold that goddamn view unless you simply reject science because you have another motherfucking viewpoint that can't that can't deal with science. So if you're a fucking biblical fucking fundamentalist, if you're a Christian fundamentalist, if you're a Jewish fundamentalist, if you're a goddamn Buddhist fundamentalist, look what the fuck is happening to the Rohingya. Any of you religious goddamn nutcases out there, all of you hate fucking science. And the same thing with the racists, the xenophobes. Whether you black, white, Asian, you know, there's Native American fuckers out there who are fucking, you know, blue-eyed goddamn Cherokee from Oklahoma, right? Talking shit about black people, calling us monkeys. You know, because I had to deal with that in Montana. And I was going through Montana and Wyoming. And I thought I was going to get it from white folks. And the fucking thing is, nobody white bothered me. I mean, it was Native American people that were fucking not nice to me. You know, it's a fucking trip, man. And then, you know, monkey. It's like, wow. Wow. You know, and then in Oklahoma, you know, bah, right? So, okay. You know, and you got the fan family out there. And I respect them. You know, I understand what it is that they're fighting for. And it's the same thing that the rest of us are fighting for when it comes to the Constitution and the rest. She's trying to get recognized by these motherfucking people. Because we got history with them. You know, besides the fact that we share in DNA, and besides the fact that we were enslaved with them in Georgia, wherever the fuck it, Kentucky, Tennessee, wherever the fuck you were, when the goddamn Trail of Tears went down. You know, we carried their motherfucking luggage. You see. And they were fucking our women whenever the fuck they felt like it. But see, but how many black folks, and I'm not talking about Hoteps, but you know, they go on to this too. You know, depending on whatever school of thought or what time of the fucking day it is, what day of the week it is. Cause you know, their philosophies shift like the fucking winds, man. You know, a lot of black folks. Cause my family certainly did this. Well, you know, Native American slavery wasn't as bad as white people. Bullshit. And I used to peddle that shit myself, man. I used to peddle that myself because, you know, you didn't want to hate these people. You know, and it's like, you know, why wouldn't you want to, you know, be down with them and blah, 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 blah. You know, all of these things, man. And then fucking turn around and ask the, you know, get out of the ghetto and start meeting natives that are not, you know, black and native. And start really meeting people from the plains and shit who are really FBI, man, full-blooded fucking Indians, you know, and it's a different trip. Now, if they're political, everything is copacetic. And see, and that's where a lot of us who are political, where we start to fucking, you know, go through our own hyper-normalization. We tend to forget that because we're open-minded in terms of race and ethnicity and who hooks up with who and who eats what and what kind of, you know, cultural shit that people have and so forth. When we see a mixed couple come down the street, you know, we don't give a shit. You know, we're not leaning over to them, I don't look at how cute their kids are. You know, we're not doing that. We're just, these are two people who are being human. Obviously, they got some sort of fucking connection. But at the same time, and no, I'm not talking about swirling, because that's just some bullshit. You know, but yeah, it is some bullshit. Because, you know, one of the things about that is, as somebody who is mixed goddamn race, who comes from a fucking family, right, of totally mixed fucking people, you know, and has stepped out and been able to see the motherfucking world a little goddamn bit, yeah, you know, there are people who marry, and marriage has always been about status any goddamn way, so, you know, there is some truth to that, but people will use a fact to try to, you know, validate their own motherfucking xenophobic fucking agenda. Now, look, you got a lot. I've talked about this on the show. You know, Asian women here that I've argued with in Portland here, where in PDX, where they'll say, oh, you know, if the race thing happens, you know, while they're holding their cocktail, I have a white husband, so they're not going to bother, you know, I'm good. And, you know, even if she was supposedly joking, it wasn't fucking funny. And, you know, and I've said here before, you know, a lot of this shit, when you look at the Alan Keyes and I don't want to say Colin Powell, but, or like a Lester Holt or something like that, or even a Bob, a Don Lemon, you know, I don't want to, like, you know, give a name because I don't know how cool that is. And I'm going off track because that thought is bringing me back to what I was talking about. You know, when I was listening to these podcasts, you know, roll back a little bit with me, you know, these black podcasts, besides the fact that they're, you know, parroting a lot of shit that is coming off of the fucking Genesis Network and, cause you know, they don't know where they're getting the information from. It's like, you know, godlike, productions. I've tried to explain the motherfuckers a million goddamn times and I've shown them the proof. Black people, 5%ers do not own and operate that website. Y'all might motherfucking contribute a little bit, but you're pulling your shit from a white supremacist fucking website. God damn. You know what it is? You know, fucking see something, they think it's interesting, they think it relates to the fucking Illuminati, and they think it's gonna get them a million fucking hits. So they copy and paste this shit and put it on their goddamn blog, their, Twitter, their Facebook, whatever the fuck, and it just gets repeated. Like the first president of the United States was black and we got a photograph to prove it. Even though Liberia has already said that this was their senator, and that photograph is not of a fucking first president of the United States, which was George goddamn Washington, with 77% of the fucking kids in Oklahoma, the goddamn students in Oklahoma, don't know that. That was an article from 2009, that 77% of the fucking students in Oklahoma State do not know who the fuck the first president is and can't goddamn think for their fucking selves because they don't want to spend any money in education over this. So the teachers are raising hell. And good the fuck on them. Bully for y'all, man. I hope you fucking get every goddamn dime that you're fucking asking for and then some. How the fuck do you cut, you know, shit for schools, man? Well, see, this is why people think the fucking earth is flat. And that the fucking earth is only 6,000 goddamn years old. And that Jesus rode fucking dinosaurs. Alright? You know, it's like when we're talking about Farrakhan, the Nation of Islam. I mean, look, man. If you go back in the archives of this show. Now, we've been on since, 2001, right? So, a long fucking time. You know, there's a whole lot of shit out there. Various archives that we've dropped and what have you. Look, man. There was somebody that sent me from Sweden. A couple of years ago, our first fucking broadcast, the first goddamn show we ever did. I mean, he's been listening all that time. I think he's an American expat up there in Sweden. And I've been told that there's a few, EU, radio things that have used snippets of this broadcast. So, you know, all of that is cool, man. All of that is cool. But see, here's the thing where I broke with Farrakhan. What am I saying? That I used to actually play speeches by Farrakhan on this broadcast. I'm not going to lie about it. And I also put out the shit just recently. I did it on Twitter and on my website, aboriginalwriter.wordpress.com, on when he was talking about Jews and gutter religion and all that kind of shit. I mean, he's gone back and forth on whether or not he actually said that. And even though I understand the context in terms of the Nation of Islam and what he was trying to say, it was still Judeophobic. I mean, it is what the fuck it is. And they've recently tried to defend his statements by using what the one of the lead rabbis in Occupy Palestine, when he referred to the African migrants over there that they're kicking out. Just throwing everybody the fuck out. He called them monkeys and half humans. Monkeys and half humans. You can look in the Israeli press, you know, because that's where Lupe and I saw. Both are hateful, fucked up statements. You know, I don't know how he can say the shit that he says, which is called from neo-Nazis. I mean, come on, man. Who came up with the whole idea of the Protocols of the Elders of Zion anyway, that there's a Jewish plot to take over the fucking world? Now, I actually did some research on that and had to correct myself not too long ago, because according to Wikipedia, you can actually trace your day of phobia all the way back to Egypt. In terms of motherfuckers actually writing documents talking about how fucked up these people are, right? So, you know, the hatred against them has been, or us, if I want to claim my grandfather, but see, I don't really. And only in the terms of the way things are discussed nowadays. I used to just say black Indian, right? You know, then I got political and it was Afro-Indian. Right? Because, you know, because I say, hey, I don't hear anything about white Indian, so why do I have to say black Indian? And, in South America, there's more of a consciousness. So, you know, Afro-Indian. But at the same time, you know, I have a Filipino, tie-in. And I have this, Ashkenazim tie-in. Which I generally, depending on what the context is, I'll say Ashkenazim. You know, I don't necessarily identify as a Jew. You know, even though I know that that's been like a thing, you know, over the past, 30 years or so, Roseanne Barr, who's out here doing her Nazi cookie thing and all that other crazy shit that she fucking says, but she's 100% Israel though. You know, and I put Roseanne Barr, whatever name she's using now, Tila Tequila, Mike Cernovich, Alex Jones, because remember, you know, in divorce court, this motherfucker's saying that he's an entertainer. Don't take what I say seriously. We're not a news program. You know, this is the same shit Bill O'Reilly did, right? Oh, we're not a news program. You know, this motherfucker talking about, you know, violent black men while he's grabbing his wife by the throat and throwing her down a flight of fucking stairs, and then got paid to leave the station after grabbing and feeling up a bunch of fucking women. Roger Ailes got how many goddamn millions of dollars, like $30 million, and then he fucking passed away. You know, it's like, what the fuck, man? You know, and yeah, you know, a lot of women who don't like the fact that I have no fucking respect, professional or otherwise, for, what the fuck is her name? I got her face in my mind. Come on, you just heard me. The chick that left Fox, she's got her, she was just interviewing Putin and all that. Megyn Kelly. Thanks, Luke. No, I have no respect for Megyn Kelly, and I tell you fucking why. I tell you why. Because she got millions of dollars for her sexual discrimination shit after she ragged women for complaining about exactly what the fuck she got millions of dollars for. If that's not white goddamn fucking privilege, I don't know what the fuck is. You know, I mean, if you go on YouTube and look for it, there's a thing about a case on a campus where this man claimed that this woman was having sex with him while he was asleep. I mean, if you're going to go tit for tat and you're going to go strict, then I guess he had a point, you know, because I mean, I believe a lot of this shit is being taken out of fucking context. And if you don't like it, then, hey, man, you know, ask me why. Just don't motherfucking lob accusations, you know, because somebody did that on Twitter, too. And the mic is still open, my sister, because this is somebody who claims that she was attacked by a particular scientist. And I don't disbelieve her. I just said, where's the evidence? But before I could even do that, she totally condemned me and basically said that I was supporting rape. And it's like, hey, wait a motherfucking minute. Wait a fucking minute. See, people jump into conclusions. I haven't said anything like that. I think my fucking record, you know, online and in my personal life speaks for its fucking self. And I've been pretty honest here on this goddamn show talking about Trump's bullshit, where I've said, you know, anybody who's ever fucking done any kind of nightlife knows that what he said, you know, is factually fucking true. When you're rich and when you're a certain type of motherfucker, when you have money and you got status and everybody knows who the fuck you are and you got that kind of pull, yeah, they let you do it because I fucking have seen it. And when I ask questions about it, I was just treated like a square. You know, you're green. You're early motherfucking 20s. What the fuck do you know? You don't know nothing. You understand what I'm saying? So, you know, come on, man. You know, in one sense, what he said was true. It was just bullshit with the arrogance and what have you and how he said it. And it's bullshit that he didn't get dinged for this, but Billy Bush. And I'm no fan of the Bush family, but, I mean, what the fuck? He got fired for not calling him out on that. And what did I say on this goddamn show? There have been times when I have stepped up and got a bloody nose or whatever the fuck else happened to me, right? For, you know, defending somebody. And there are times where it was like, okay, is it worth me getting shot? Is it worth me getting fucked up? Because I have talked about this before. I have broken up fights, physical fucking fights, between married couples, long-term couples, only to be punched in the face by the chick. Only to be kicked and bit by the chick who just got her motherfucking face rearranged by this creep. So, you know, you gotta fucking weigh shit out, man, on what the fuck you're gonna do. You know, it's like when these fuckers talk about, oh, well, like Trump talking about, I would have ran into the school. Oh, you know, Dana Loesch or whoever the fuck you, cause it seems odd to me what, how her name is spelled and how it's pronounced, right? Loesch. That motherfucking nutcase. Who, am I getting this right today, Luke? That she says some shit about, yeah. That she says some shit about, if King had a gun, if any of those people were armed, they could have saved him. Shit, what the fuck? But no, but Uhotep's okay with these crazy ass fucking people, right? No, man, I'm sick of the bullshit is what it is. And it's confusing. You know, because like I said, you know, when I was talking about earlier, but roll with me, you know, about these podcasts. It's very difficult for me to listen to a lot of these black podcasts because they're really not fact checking a lot of the shit that they're saying. And, you know, I mean, come on. One motherfucking show. Well, actually, it's two shows, two different broadcasts. And I'm not going to name them because they know who the fuck they are. They're still playing Malachi Z York shit. We just talked about him in the last broadcast. Yeah, I mean, that motherfucker's a child molester. He's doing life. Like 100 and some odd goddamn years. So he's a black child molester, so he's gonna get the max. He ran a cult. He was fucking with all of the adult women and the children. They put that motherfucker, I think he's in the Supermax. We talked about that crazy mother, you know, he was the voice of God or he was God. Like these fuckers talking about, you know, David Icke. How the fucking David Icke have any credibility? You know, I said, you know, come on, man. And fucking, you know, how the fuck are you going to tell me I'm supposed to take you seriously and have an open mind and you're playing Malachi Z York while you're complaining about Pizzagate? This is a black podcast talking about, and the Podesta emails. And well, anyway, the one I'm talking about that is new and is apparently getting popular. It's got 10,000 fucking downloads. I don't think we've ever had 10,000 downloads. I mean, what was the max we've had here, Luke? Like 1,400? Because it depends on the subject matter, which it always is. But it also has a lot to do with how much we push it. And neither of us, because she gave up her Facebook about 8 months ago. Because you said you just got tired of it, right? And I've never been on, so. Excuse me. We don't promote this shit that much. I mean, I push it on Twitter and you do it on your Twitter feed, right? That you don't want to give out. All right. Well, I mean, yeah. I was sending it to people directly and I might do that depending on the show. But no, we're not pushing this much. And no, we don't ask for money either. So, you know, when you're wondering why we're not in here, it's because, you know, life got in the way and sometimes we just don't have the dosh. You know, we just don't have it to come in here to do it. But we're not asking you for it because we figure you don't fucking have it either. And we're trying to make the point that you need to go out there and do your own media, but don't do bullshit media. Don't do, you know, opinion media and then try to pass it off as news, as factual news. You know, don't do that. You know, that's, you know, we've been pretty open. This shit is spoken word. I mean, I tried to do a news program, but I'm too fucking opinionated. So it's like, it didn't work out. Right? So, you know, it's like whatever the fuck I'm talking about is what I'm talking about, man, because that's what's going on at the time. But back to these black podcasts. What I'm saying is I couldn't listen to this shit. I wanted to because they were tearing Obama a new rector, man. I said, okay, I want to listen, but I had to turn it off after about 10, 15 minutes because They kept calling each other nigga, man. It's like they didn't even have names. This nigga. Yeah, nigga. But tell me, nigga. I don't know, nigga. What about that, nigga? Man, fuck you all with that shit, man. You know, it's like I've been punched out by fucking white people. You know, like I said, I've lost jobs. You know, I mean, I've been down with this movement from the fucking get. And I did not go out there and take all them motherfucking risks, man. Because I'm too old for this shit now. I'm too crippled for this shit. But I didn't go out there to do that for black people to be calling themselves nigger on open form. And worse, for motherfuckers to identify themselves as niggers. And then wonder why the police are shooting them and shit at will. See, one of the things about being mixed and being conscious of being mixed, because, you know, I'm connected to all of the communities in which I have a relationship to. You know, I'm connected to the Philippine community. I'm connected to the Jewish community here. I've only run into two black Jewish communities. But I'm not a practicing Jew, so it really didn't. You know, I mean, there are certain things I've talked about here on the show that my mother did that were quote-unquote Jewish and, certain little things. So, I mean, you know, she put up menorahs and things like that, and we had certain things around the house. I mean, it was a mishmash of things. Native American here, you know, some of my father's, you know, Geechee Gullah shit over here, you know. So, you know, when you look at that, and it's like when you have contact, I mean real contact with these other groups, you realize that they're not calling themselves kikes. They're not calling themselves, the epithet of their goddamn oppressor, right? Whereas the black Americans, somehow in the 21st century, you know, we have gotten to the point where now, if I'm at a party, because I just talked about this recently, this happened over the last holiday season. And I'm like, I'm really uncomfortable with you guys calling yourselves niggas and black people niggas, man. And I was told to leave. That I was acting and sounding and looking, because they were fucking with my clothes, right? Like a white boy, you know, which is funny because all of the shit that I used to do, you know, you motherfuckers with the tattoos and the piercings and the goddamn weird ass colors and shit, y'all used to beat the shit out of Afro-punk motherfuckers for that back in the 80s. Back in the fucking 90s. I've had to visit friends in the hospital who had stitches in their goddamn scalps because somebody black beat their fucking head in because she had a goddamn mohawk. And wearing a pair of fucking Doc Martens, shit, right? So, you know, now all of a sudden, you know, they've co-opted all of this shit, but because they're not old enough to understand how that shit connects to their own motherfucking history as an ethnic group and how this ethnic group has been marginalized within the United States over the past fucking hundreds of years. They've decided that, as motherfuckers keep telling me, I'm a nigga. I'm not an Afro-American. I'm not a black American. And all of this shit is associated with this dumbass motherfucking hip-hop universe, which in and of itself is fucking hypocrisy. Why am I saying that? How the fuck are you going to tell me, oh, well, we need to respect the queens, but you're calling the girls, you know, you're calling the sisters bitches in these goddamn songs. Women are calling themselves bitches. Women are now identifying as bitches. There are women here in Portland that have bitch tattooed on their fucking necks. Where's they look? Yeah. The two things I complained about the most. Gucci tattoos. I mean, you don't even own any real fucking Gucci. And having bitch tattooed on. But then you want to talk about you're a strong woman and, you know, respect me. How? You know, it's like, you know, it's the same thing with black folks. You wonder why the cops are shooting you. Well, you're calling yourselves niggas. You're going on motherfucking TV and demanding the right to call yourselves niggas. Telling people like me that I'm a punk-ass sucker, wannabe motherfucking white boy because I think black people calling themselves niggas is wrong. When I just fucking finished telling you, you go into any goddamn ethnic group in this fucking country, any ethnic group in the world, nobody identifies themselves as how their motherfucking oppressors identify them but black Americans. And now that there are nigger stores popping up in Africa, You wonder why I have a concern? Yeah, I have a fucking concern. I have a concern about fucking ignorance, man, out of fucking control. I'm concerned about that. And I don't give a fuck about what y'all say, man. And I don't give a fuck how many degrees you got or how many people you teach. It was like, you know, fucking people, oh, we have to use hip-hop to teach the kids. If we don't reach them with hip-hop, we're going to lose an entire generation of black children. My God, we have to use hip-hop to teach. We have to, or we're going to lose them. My God. Yeah. Yeah, I was at, you know, public meetings where that happened. And yeah, they introduced it. They had the rappers come in, blah, blah, blah. Have you seen a change? I haven't seen a motherfucking change. All this shit did was make things worse. Everybody wanted to go to the studio, but nobody wanted to go to the fucking library. And I'm going to end this right now because Lupe's twirling her finger, telling me to wind this up. Look, you got a motherfucking murder spree going on in Palestine right now. Now, remember, I'm married to a Christian Palestinian, so this is an issue in my house. She is not political and has nothing to do with any of that shit, but she fucking, I mean, the goddamn, it started out as 15 when we reported it, it's like 18 now, right? So, you know, 18 fucking people at a unarmed goddamn protest are shot to death and shit by snipers from the fucking IDF. You know, you look at that fucking resistance. And look at the amount, I'm not talking about the violence in it. I'm talking about the fact that the fucking Palestinian kids, part of their resistance is fucking going to school, is studying. If you know anything about Palestinian goddamn history, these were some, between Palestine and Iraq, these were the scholars of the Arab world. These were the intellectuals of the Arab world. And they didn't drop that, and they're not going to drop that bullshit just because their oppressor came in. You understand what I'm saying? And decided to, you know, reconfigure their motherfucking reality and shit. It's like, no. No, but, you know, the black American, well, you know, the Native American, yeah. I mean, there's a whole, how many motherfucking, you know, young Native American kids do you see wearing Chief Wahoo goddamn baseball caps and goddamn jackets? But you can't say anything. But you can't say anything. Oh, but we don't understand why the kids are fucked up. We got to find a way to reach them. How about getting rid of that bullshit? How about not walking in the goddamn trail that your fucking oppressor set for you? This is the Angry Indian. Stay tuned. You're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Jen Gorlick. I'm an activist in D.C. I support a free and unoccupied Palestine, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
The whole concept of human flight is nothing strange, right? Human being able to fly on planes is nothing absurd. Practically all of you in here have been on a plane before. So the concept of a human being getting on a man-made craft and flying from one place to the other is not spooky. All right? So, again, we want to demystify this whole subject now.
Come on.
We're not taking you out of space, brothers and sisters. But in 1975, NASA scientists have took what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said and used it as their primary theory of how the moon was formed. It is obvious that the intelligence that taught Elijah Muhammad was and is an intelligence far superior to anything in this world. Since this is true, and it is, then what about this teaching that Elijah Muhammad taught us about these mother plane, this mother plane and these wheels, these crafts that are now, decades later, being referred to as UFOs? But you'll notice how they always deliberately leave him and the Nation of Islam out of their ufological studies, right, out of their ufological research. Now, obviously, the American government knows about these crafts. Witness it on a regular basis. The government knows about it. The question is, why don't you? This is a very well-known historical event. But before this whole spaceship phenomenon hit major public concerns, the mothership that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad talked about and some of these baby planes were already witnessed by the government's military as early as 1942. Are y'all gonna research this? All right. The sighting rendered perhaps the first known direct confrontation with the U.S. military and these planes.
February 25th marks an anniversary that few remember and some refuse to forget. In 1942, an unidentified object was seen hovering over the California coast. The military
and Roosevelt knew something. He knew that there was a man in America talking about these things. A man that they seen, thought, or tried to make seem was super crazy. So just 3 months after the Battle of Los Angeles, less than 3 months, President Roosevelt ordered the arrest of Elijah Muhammad. Elijah Muhammad was and was the only one talking about these crab, this wheel. And since everything he taught added directly up to what they encountered over Los Angeles, President Roosevelt, by executive order, ordered the arrest of a U.S. citizen, Elijah Muhammad. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad talks about that arrest. He states, the white man admitted to me that they've seen it. They just can't get to it. So you know they had them pissed off when Elijah Muhammad, this little black man, telling them, yeah, it's right there. I know the power on it. You ain't do nothing to it. So Allah has always or often shown his strength and his power to the powers that be, to his enemies, just to let you know, look, this is what you're dealing with. Presidents and high-ranking officials seeing these powers. Don't you know?
Ronald Reagan, the great communicator.
While he was governor of California, he witnessed these craft. And he said, and I quote, we followed it for several minutes. It was a bright white light. We followed it to Bakersfield, and all of a sudden, to our utter amazement, it went straight up into the heavens. That's what he said to a reporter who was working, I think, for Newsweek at the time. But you know, Reagan had been fascinated with UFOs ever since. That was when he was governor. He took his fascinations and his concerns all the way to office with him when he became...
Suddenly there was a threat to this world from some other species, from another planet, outside in the universe.
For those of us who grew up in the 80s, you may remember Reagan with this thing called Star Wars. That's what Star Wars was all about. Now, I was a young boy in the 80s now. I was in elementary school, but I remember
always hearing about Star Wars on television.
You know? What was this? He wasn't talking about the movie. He was talking about trying to defend and go, even possibly go to war with these crafts that he could not explain. But look, Reagan's witness account of the UFO worried him so much that he started, while in office, and those who grew up in the 80s may remember this, he started to rely heavily on astrology in making his decisions, to the point where he literally hired his astrologist, this lady named Joan Quigley, to basically manage and run most of a lot of his office affairs.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
I've got Abby! What do you think of my powers now?
American International presents Abby, the story of a woman possessed. She took the devil for a lover, and he possessed her, body and soul. Abby, a story of terror, lust, and exorcism.
Grab her arms and hold her.
Abby, starring William Marshall as the exorcist.
I command you to vacate this body now.
And Carol Speed as Abby. Can anyone stop her? Can anyone help her? Can anyone save her soul?
I've got Abby!
Abby, the story of a woman possessed. Rated R, under 17, not admitted without parent.
Охота на волков. Рвусь из сил, из всех сухожилий. Но сегодня опять как вчера обложили меня, обложили. Гонят весело на номера. И заели, хлопочут двустволки. Там охотники прячутся в тень. На снегу кувыркаются волки, превратившись в живую мишень. Идет охота на волков, идет охота на серых хищников, матерых и щенков. Кричат загонщики и лают псы до рвоты. Кровь на снегу и пятна красные флажком. Наши ноги и челюсти быстры. Почему же вожак? Дай ответ. Мы затравленно мчимся на выстрел и не пробуем через запрет. Волк не может, не должен, иначе вот кончается время мое. Тот, которому я предназначен, улыбнулся и поднял ружье. И вот охота на волков идет охота на серых хищников, матерых и щенков. Кричат загонщики и лают псы до рвоты. Кровь на снегу и пятна красные флажком. Не на равных играют с волками егеря, но не дрогнет рука, оградив нам свободу флажками. Бьют уверенно наверняка. Волк не может нарушить традиции. Видно, в детстве слепые щенки. Мы волчата сосали волчицу и всосали нельзя за флажки. Идет охота на волков, идет охота на серых хищников, матерых и щенков. Кричат загонщики и лают псы до рвоты. Кровь на снегу и пятна красные флажком. Я из повиновения вышел за флажки, жажда жизни сильней. Только сзади я радостно слышал удивленные крики людей. Рвусь из сил, из всех сухожилий, но сегодня не так, как вчера. Обложили меня, обложили, но остались ни с чем егеря. Идет охота на волков, идет охота на серых хищников, матерых и щенков. Кричат загонщики и лают псы до рвоты. Кровь на снегу и пятна красные флажком.
Yo, what's up? My name is Jasiri X, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really responding to the call, man, of my sister Rosa Clemente, you know what I'm saying? For Men in Hip Hop, really stand up and say, like, rape under no circumstances is acceptable, you know what I'm saying? Rape shouldn't be rapped about, it shouldn't be supported, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really feeling like, you know, especially after Rick Ross came out today and said what he said, you know, he didn't use the word rape, but he described a scenario in which, you know, he put something in a woman's drink and had sex with her, and she didn't consent. If you have sex with a woman and she didn't consent, that's rape. And we have to say no to rape. And beyond Rick Ross, whether it's Fox News or their viewers attacking Zelina Maxwell for asking men to stop raping women, whether it's Hollywood, you know, perpetuating, you know, this rape culture, you know, it's got to stop. It's really, you know, we got to take personal responsibility as men. My name is Jasiri X. This is One Hood.
Coming to you live from Northeast Jefferson County, Kansas. Your one true voice in Kansas. This is the Radio Free Kansas.
I'm your host, Mike Cadell, broadcasting from North Jefferson County, Kansas, smack dab between Kansas City, Topeka, Lawrence, Atchison. Easiest way to describe it. Put together quite a good show. Think you're going to like it.
Radio Free Kansas on blogtalkradio.com/HideInCopFire.
you, Trump. We'll see you on the streets. Am I disappointed? Yes. But am I surprised? Hell no.
It clearly shows what the country is made up of, what the country was founded on.
Garrison described the United States as a greedy, hypocritical, racist, white supremacist, evil, warmongering nation.
Donald Trump is just a symptom of a greater system that has basically f***ed up for my people for over 500 years.
To me, the United States was founded in violence, developed in violence, and violence is an American, U.S. American tradition.
The thing that's rattling around in my brain is all of this militarized police and the attacks and everything that's been happening happened under the Obama administration. And I can't help but question what might happen under a Trump administration.
Now we have a really strong enemy to organize against that causes us to say, hey, we gotta get together.
I'm Carol Gordon. Inform yourself about Plan B emergency contraception. Information can be the best protection, especially dealing with a sexual assault or unprotected sex. If you are 17 or older, you do not need a prescription to receive Plan B. All Indian Health Service facilities should carry Plan B, but most don't. This is a violation of your reproductive rights. Call your local Indian Health Service unit and ask for Plan B. It is our right as Native women to receive Plan B. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
Missy Elliott for the Black AIDS Institute.
HIV happens to us more than it does anybody else, which is why we should all get tested, because if we don't step up, then nobody will.
Get informed. Tested, get treated, and get involved. For more information, call the Black AIDS Institute at 213-353-3610. That's 213-353-3610. Or online at www.blackaids.org.
Este es Radio Insurgente. Voz del Ejército Zapatista de Liberación Nacional, transmitiendo desde las montañas del sureste mexicano.
That's not unfair, because you've made a public issue of this, and I think you're right that he made the promise there would be a wall, and he made a promise that we were going to get rid of the illegal aliens in this country, and you didn't think he was fulfilling those promises. Today he announced he's going to put the military on the border. Is that a start in the right direction?
I don't think so. What are they going to do, shoot the illegals? I mean, both Obama and Bush did this too. No, there's a reason the chant was, we want a wall. We don't want to use the military to process illegals and move them into the country. He better be stopping them, and if he's letting any of them through, I mean, just putting the military on the border, again, that is what Obama did, in order to put them on buses and move them into the interior of the country.
No, but he doesn't have to do that.
If any one of these illegals gets in, they better be living at Mar-a-Lago.
Well, no, but I see his method differently. As I understand Obama, he took some National Guard and said, will you go down and do administrative tasks for the Customs and Border Patrol? I don't think that's what Trump has in mind. It's something I've suggested, and a lot of other of my listeners have suggested, and that's saying, if you're going to have the National Guard drill for 2 weeks a year, that's the standard, 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year, why don't you have them do their drills in something the military actually does, which is, we've got this line, hold this line, and if you have the military patrolling up and down the most vulnerable or most crossed parts of that border, that itself is a visual deterrent to crossing, isn't it?
I don't know. We'll see. If I were an illegal, I mean, unless you're going to shoot one and send a message to the rest, as the Voltaire's line in Candide is, We hang one to encourage the others. If you shoot one to encourage the others, maybe it'll work. But otherwise, we'll see. We'll see. But the president better understand we don't want the military doing what they did under Obama and Bush, which is process them and get their names, listen to the lies, put them on buses, sign them up for food stamps. No, we don't need the military, you know, working, doing La Raza's work for it here. Merely saying I'm sending the military to the border, especially from the guy who spent the last year saying, I love dreamers. Oh, please, we have to amnesty dreamers. Completely the contrary of everything he ran on. He better understand that we don't want them doing La Raza's job.
Pyramid scheme of dirty jobs, and who's gonna build your wall?
Who's gonna build your wall, boy? And who's gonna mow your lawn? Who's gonna cook your Mexican food when your Mexican maid is gone? Who's gonna wax the floors tonight down at the local mall? Who's gonna Muslims, we got fundamentalist Jews, we got fundamentalist Christians, they'll blow the whole thing up for you. But as I travel around this big old world, there's one thing that I most fear. It's a white man in a golf shirt with a cell phone in his ear. Yeah, who's gonna build your wall, boy?
This is Val Amata.
And Donna from EPSI.
And you're listening to a
Creative Commons licensed podcast.
Word.
Anarchism is not bombs, disorder, or chaos. It is not robbery and murder. It is not a war of each against all.
Tune in to Subversion 1312, the 4ZZZ Anarchy Show.
Tuesday from 9 till 10 p.m. on 102.1 FM or streaming 4ZZZFM.org.au.
Oh,
How about trying this future on for size?
I like going to cons. I like meeting my fans. I like meeting other writers and podcasters. And I like getting a chance to meet the authors I admire, and even the occasional celebrity. You know what else I like? I like being around people, women especially, who act flirty, dress sexy, and don't mind being looked at once in a while. I'm a married man, but you know, when I stop looking, it'll be time to bury me. But you know what? Some of you fuckers are spoiling it for the rest of us. When you assholes, and you know who you are, go putting your hands where they don't belong, you're spoiling it. I've seen you fuckers. I've heard the stories. Brushing up against someone in the hall. Copping a feel when you think you can get away with it. Treating a human being like a sex toy because you think your desires and a bit of skin give you the right to grope anyone you like. You're spoiling it for the rest of us. Because you know what happens when someone gets treated that way? They retreat. They treat anyone who even looks at them as if they're committing a crime. They distrust. They dress down, trading short skirts and low necklines for loose t-shirts and sweatpants. They scorn, and eventually they stop coming to cons at all. And then all of us pay the price because you couldn't keep your filthy paws to yourself. So get this, you goddamn dirty ape. Next time I see this happening, I'm calling you on your shit. You are going to be the one who gets humiliated. You are going to be the one sticking your tail between your legs. You are going to be the one that's sorry you came to the con. And don't think that just because you're not a man, or that your target isn't a woman, that I won't step in just as hard, because I will, motherfucker. And it goes just the same outside the con, too. Doesn't matter where I see you, I will stop you. And I'm not the only one who's going to be keeping my eye out, either. You can fucking count on it.
Where the pavement ends, the West begins. Black Rodeo.
We fought side by side, many of them died. Nobody ever told you they were black cowboys.
Black Rodeo, with special appearances by Woody Strode.
It was the first time that the blacks could run in and say, boss, the Indians are coming.
And Muhammad Ali.
I want y'all to saddle up and ride out. I'm the new sheriff in this town. I'm a bad nigga.
Black Rodeo, with music by Aretha Franklin, B.B. King, Ray Charles, and Little Richard.
Oh, my soul.
If nobody ever told you there were black cowboys, see Black Rodeo from Cinerama Releasing, rated G, general audiences.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
We are the Ku Klux Klan. We hate niggers. We hate Jews. We hate faggots. And we hate specs. We don't have to have a reason to hate. People need to get off your ass and wake up. This is America.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
Adolf Hitler's unspeakable crimes and his responsibility for the deaths of millions are known the world over. To this day, he exerts such a strange fascination that he's been the focus of over 120,000 books and studies detailing every aspect of his life. But could the Nazi dictator, who was also responsible for the worst anti-gay persecutions in history, have kept one explosive secret until now? Could Adolf Hitler have been gay?
auf Hitler Platz steht eine junge Eiche. Sie strebt zur Sonne auf von Schurm und Not.
Yes, I do believe that Hitler was homosexual. There is such a huge amount of evidence. There must be something in it.
Hitler's sexuality has been the topic of endless speculation, but his possible homosexuality was never fully explored until German historian Lothar Machtan wrote The Hidden Hitler. Its publication resulted in an international bestseller and a firestorm of controversy.
While reading it, I asked myself, how responsible is it to publish this? How responsible is it as a historian to write something which is controversial and has political implications?
When I wrote it, I thought, can you really publish this kind of book? Because you have no control how this is being received by the audience.
And the answer I came up with is, it is irresponsible.
But then I thought, the main task of a historian is to find out the truth.
But few scholars are convinced that Machtan has found out the truth.
Hitler sells, sex sells. And I think that's what it comes down to.
It's hard for me to imagine that he's a professor at a leading university.
It was like a supermarket tabloid. The investigative techniques were disgraceful.
He doesn't know his ass from his elbow. Serious historians everywhere have criticized the way that Lothar Machtan deals with evidence. Along the lines of the formula, two untruths probably add up to make a truth.
But as many gay scholars and reporters know, proving the homosexuality of a closeted historical figure is almost impossible.
Anyone who's hiding their homosexuality goes to great lengths to make sure there isn't evidence, but you don't need that solid evidence. We have enough information here to infer that it could be true. If it looks like a duck and walks like a duck, it's a duck.
Lothar Machtan has spent 5 years unearthing what he considers to be convincing evidence of Hitler's hidden homosexuality. An eyewitness from the trenches of World War I who testified that he caught Hitler having sex with a fellow soldier. A top secret file from Munich's Vice Squad in the 1920s alleging that Hitler paid young men for sex. And accounts from several of Hitler's closest friends, some of whom were themselves homosexual, alleging that the Führer was gay. Even some gay victims of the Nazis don't find the idea so far-fetched.
Und glauben Sie, dass Hitler auch schwul war?
Ja, aber wissen Sie, wir wollen doch mal so sagen. Die hörte man immer wieder, aber man hatte auch das Gefühl, oh Gott, die sind so schlecht.
Within Hitler's ranks, many find Machtan's thesis deeply offensive. Former SS man Rochus Misch saw Hitler daily for 5 years, up until the day the dictator committed suicide.
Also homosexuality, das ist natürlich ein schlechter Witz. So was gibt es nicht. Denn er lebt ja nur unter unserer Aufsicht. Also das kann gestrichen werden. Sowas hat es nie gegeben, nicht mal im Ansatz.
Lothar Machtan, who is not gay, sat down to debate his thesis with his former tutor, who is. Rüdiger Lautmann is Germany's leading gay sociologist and a fellow professor at Bremen University.
Even since the 20s and 30s, it is unlikely that there is any substantial proof of Hitler's possible homosexuality. But what do you mean by more solid proof? Tell me specifically. There is solid proof that someone had sex with him. There is nobody who said,
I was in bed with Hitler.
wenn es keinen Beweis gibt.
And if there is no proof available today, no surviving homosexual proof of homosexual acts, then we have to draw the conclusion that he was not homosexual.
Homosexuell war er nicht. Denn das war der Mann, der durch seine absolute...
This is the man who probably, for the first time in history, was able to destroy everything about himself that he could, because of his absolute power. And still, it has not been possible to eliminate these rumors, these assumptions about his homosexuality. Well, you can't eliminate rumors anyway. Quite the opposite. If you try to fight rumors, you strengthen them. And that is what he did.
Hitler's life of deceptions and cover-ups could be said to have begun here. This is, or rather was, Dollersheim, the Austrian town where Hitler's illegitimate father Alois was born. But Hitler had no intention of honoring his family's village.
Shortly after Hitler took over Austria, he turned his ancestral homeland into an artillery testing ground, that he almost wanted it wiped off the map in some way because he didn't want people looking into his Austrian past.
People must not know who I am. They must not know where I come from.
People who would go to Hitler's ancestral homeland in the backwoods of Austria and try to seek out information were always in danger of getting beaten up by the Gestapo.
Dollersheim's eerie ruins, symbolic of Hitler's obsessive secrecy, remain off limits to the general public.
It's almost a metaphor for how incomplete, how absent, how fragmentary our knowledge of Hitler's past and what made him tick is.
Mokhtan's search for the hidden Hitler begins in his boyhood home of Linz, which in 1905 became the scene of the 16-year-old Hitler's closest friendship with August Kubitschek.
August Kubitschek was the first and maybe the closest friend of Adolf Hitler. They met when they both were very young men in Linz. August Kubitschek was very fond of Hitler. He adored him.
And as Kubitschek wrote in his memoirs, Hitler adored Kubitschek as well.
I cannot endure it when you consort and converse with other young people. I demand absolute exclusivity.
They even dressed identically.
We must have been taken for brothers, which is what we wanted.
Hitler claimed to adore a girl named Stephanie, but he never made an effort to meet her.
As far as Kubitschek is talking about this, you get the impression that Hitler wasn't interested at all in women at that time and was not interested in heterosexuality.
Adolf did not engage in love affairs or flirtations, and he always rejected the coquettish advances of girls or women. Women and girls took an interest in him, but he always evaded their endeavors.
Hitler was determined to pursue a career as an artist. And in 1907, he left Kubitschek in Linz and traveled here to Vienna, home of the famous opera house, to fulfill his dream. A dream dashed by rejection from Vienna's Academy of Fine Arts. A year later, young August Kubitschek arrived at Vienna's train station to set up house with his friend.
He greeted me at the train station in joyful excitement with a kiss and took me straight to his lodgings where I myself was to spend the first night.
At least that was what Kubitschek wrote in the first version published by the Nazis in 1943. But when his memoirs were republished 10 years later in 1953, the effusive greeting had turned coldly formal.
In accordance with contemporary custom, he kissed me lightly on the cheek.
It was a very crucial point because, a kissing of man was not that usual at that time. The fact that Kubitschek cancelled that in the second version for me made sense to hide something that was not that comfortable for him.
It could simply be the difference between the first version being written during the Third Reich itself in 1943, when Hitler is still the leader of the country, and the following version in 1953, after which everybody knows that Hitler was the monster who caused the Holocaust. And this is just one way of Kubitschek trying to distance himself a little further from Hitler.
The Vienna of Kubitschek and Hitler had a hidden but thriving homosexual subculture that was emerging in cities all over Germany and Austria.
Huge gay subculture and lesbian subculture appeared in Germany. It was a very vital subculture with many gay newspapers.
In his memoirs, Kubitschek recounts the time he and Hitler were picked up by a factory owner.
A very rich man, or a reasonable rich man, met them on the street and invited them to a restaurant and asked them to order what they want.
The man told us that he was averse to forming friendships with women because they were only after money.
But later, back in their boarding house, Hitler surprised Kubitschek by pulling out an invitation inviting Hitler up to the man's room.
He's a homosexual, Adolf said matter-of-factly. Adolf enlightened me on the phenomenon.
Hitler was not surprised at all about this kind of invitation. So to me it seems that maybe he was already used to that.
It could also be that the man thinks that Hitler is pimping for Gustl Kubitschek, and this is why he gives him his card.
Vienna's gay underground coincided with the emergence of bold new theories championing homosexuality.
The homosexual movement in Germany began in the middle of the 19th century. Karl Heinrich Ulrichs published a series of little publications from 1862 on the male-male love. In 1869, a writer from Hungarian coined the term homosexuality.
Then in the 1890s, Magnus Hirschfeld, founder of the first gay rights movement, opened a scientific institute that promoted a radical new theory of homosexuality.
Magnus Hirschfeld believed that there was a third sex, essentially a woman's mind trapped in a male body or something along those lines.
A rival faction of the gay movement was led by Adolf Brand, editor of the homosexual magazine Der Eigene, or The Elite. Brand's faction disagreed with Hirschfeld's effeminate third sex theory, arguing instead that homosexuals formed a Superman elite that was more masculine than heterosexuals, not less.
They picked up the tradition of male bonding, of so-called male heroes, with a very strict avoidance of feminine traits of homosexuals.
Brand conceptualized homosexuality as manly, inner assumed Greek tradition, and Hirschfeld had a more broader view of homosexuality. He included all the sissies and the effeminate types.
Magnus Hirschfeld was Jewish. Adolf Brand, a German nationalist. These identities seem to have inflamed their differences.
We do find a lot of very divisive bickering amongst the gay groups in Germany and severe falling out between them. They don't talk to each other.
Adolf Brand was more connected to the racial theory, to the Aryan idea, and he published photo collections with the headline German Race, just to show how beautiful the German men are.
The celebration of the male physique and athletic male bonding also informed the von der Vogel scouting movement. Influenced by this, Hitler and Kubitschek became outdoors enthusiasts and would lose themselves for hours in the German countryside. One time, while walking through the woods, the 19-year-old Hitler and his friend were caught in a rainstorm and took shelter in a farmer's hut.
I took one of the big cloths, spread it out on the hay, and told Adolf to remove his wet shirt and underpants and wrap himself in the dry cloth. He lay down naked on the cloth. I folded the ends together and wrapped him up. He was highly amused by the whole venture, whose romantic conclusion pleased him greatly. Besides, we were nice and warm by now.
Mokhtan speculates that such passages may be veiled references.
Nobody used to write about these things in a very open or frank manner. You have to develop an ability to read between the lines and to interpret this kind of sources.
This is quite ridiculous. They're wrapped in a thick sheet of tarpaulin. It's canvas. It's really not possible to have close, intimate physical contact with a couple of sheets of canvas wrapped around you. This is quite ridiculous.
Whatever the nature of his woodland tryst, Hitler was deeply influenced by the popular von der Vogel movement. One of its founders, the homosexual writer Hans Bleuer, went on to write a controversial book in 1913 called The Von der Vogel Movement as an Erotic Phenomenon.
My male hero can become an outright idol for other men.
Bleuer's Führer principle, a strong leader supported by heroic male bonding, would one day be enshrined in the Hitler Youth and Nazism itself. Bleuer himself later wrote of his belief in Hitler's homosexuality.
Hitler was very well acquainted with my books, of course. No one can be in any doubt that Hitler thought and acted homosexually, that he was definitely a man's man.
Author Lothar Mokhtan speculates that the young Hitler's notions about heroic male bonding were shaken by a high-profile homosexual scandal that exploded while Hitler was living in Vienna in 1907. The so-called Eulenburg affair erupted when the German Kaiser's closest friend, Prince Eulenburg, was accused of homosexuality. It became a huge political scandal across Germany and Austria, fueling public anger against Eulenburg's accuser, journalist Maximilian Harden, who was Jewish.
The anti-Semitic press interpreted this scandal as some kind of conspiracy against the German race and against very important traditions of German culture.
Another key player in the drama was Magnus Hirschfeld, the gay liberationist. Hirschfeld, who was also Jewish, testified in court to the homosexuality of Eulenburg and several of his aristocratic friends.
Drawing on the evidence presented, I have arrived at the scientific conclusion that the plaintiff manifests a condition, which is customarily termed homosexual.
According to Mokhtan, Hirschfeld's outing of Eulenburg's circle earned the undying enmity of an insecure, closeted young homosexual living in Vienna at the time, Adolf Hitler.
What that swinish old Jew hawks around constitutes the filthiest slur on our nation.
He was very uncomfortable with this debate about homosexuality. Hitler put his anger about this scandal to the Jewish people.
Meanwhile, things were not going well for Hitler personally or professionally. In 1908, after just 4 months living with Hitler, Kubitschek left Vienna. Hitler, struggling to earn a living as an artist, was eventually forced to move here to a men's shelter that still exists in modern Vienna. Years later, the hostel was described by Ernst Hamstengel, a wealthy, reputedly homosexual art dealer who later became one of Hitler's best friends and financial patrons.
It was a place where elderly men went in search of young men for homosexual pleasures. It is probable that these types of old roués and young gigolos became familiar to young Adolf at this time.
Another well-known homosexual from that era, Magnus Hirschfeld, had studied the sexual culture of such hostels.
Going back to Magnus Hirschfeld, we know that hostels were very popular for finding homosexual relationships, and especially the one that Hitler lived in. But we don't know, of course, for sure, because all the police documents or records have been destroyed, if Hitler was a male prostitute at that time.
If Hitler were a male prostitute, I really don't think he'd have many customers. I mean, look at the guy. He walks around with a permanent scowl on his face, and he talks and talks and talks and won't shut up. I mean, no, sorry.
In 1913, Hitler moved to Munich and settled in its bohemian gay neighborhood, where he eked out a living as a postcard painter. But that life was cut short when Germany mobilized for war. A photograph taken here in Munich's Odeonsplatz on August 2, 1914, shows a cheering young Hitler. Hitler immediately enlisted and was shipped to the front. Years later, Hitler recalled his wartime feelings in a speech.
I discovered the glorious meaning of a male community during the conflict.
Sexologist Magnus Hirschfeld made an in-depth contemporary study of the heroic and intensely homoerotic life of the trenches.
Hirschfeld published in 1931 the so-called Sittengeschichte of the First World War. And in that book, he clearly shows that homosexuality was not just supported in the First World War, but it was just a part of being a man, being a soldier at that time. There were transvestite theaters. There were pictures of homosexual friends in the First World War.
Hitler quickly became inseparable from another young man, his fellow soldier and closest wartime friend, Ernst Schmidt.
Well, Ernst Schmidt, everyone who was talking about Hitler during the First World War mentioned this very close friendship.
And they seem to have been together all the time.
Watching them was another close comrade of Hitler's during the war, a dispatch messenger named Hans Mend. Years later, in 1931, as Hitler rose to prominence, the Nazis got Mend to write a glowing account of Hitler's heroism in the trenches. But not glowing enough. Although it became a bestseller, Hitler disliked it and ostracized Mend, who retaliated by publishing an open letter in the press.
If my book had cited all the details of what I deliberately suppressed, Hitler would certainly not have emerged as a great hero.
It was while researching Hitler's wartime friendship with Ernst Schmidt and Hans Mend in Munich's Bavarian State Archives that Mokhtar made perhaps his most startling discovery. Secret testimony that Mend gave to the anti-Nazi resistance in 1939.
I came across the Mend Protocol for the first time in this archive, and when I took a look, I was completely shocked.
Hitler never looked at a woman. We suspected him of homosexuality right away. He was extremely eccentric and displayed womanish characteristics.
The main point of this protocol is that Hitler had a homosexual relationship with Ernst Schmidt.
In 1915, we were billeted in a brewery and slept in the hay. Hitler was bedded down at night with Schmittel, his male whore. We heard a rustling in the hay. Then someone switched on his electric flashlight and growled, "Look at those two faggots." I myself took no further interest in the matter.
He didn't even see it. He said, "I took no further interest in it." He doesn't say that he looked up and saw them locked in each other's arms or whatever. So I think it's a very slender body of evidence on which to draw these conclusions that Hitler and Schmidt were lovers.
Many argue that Mend's credibility was undercut by his record of arrests in tumultuous post-war Germany.
If Mend was on the witness stand, you know, any competent defense attorney would, you know, point out that he's changed his story to fit whoever is paying him. It's not impossible that Mend is telling the truth, but he's not a reliable witness.
But Mokhtar believes that Hans Mend's case is bolstered by the mysterious fact that Hitler did not get promoted above lowly Lance Corporal, unusual for a war hero who twice won the coveted Iron Cross for bravery.
We know from the diaries of Erich Ebermeyer that in the military files of Hitler there was a document telling us that he was not promoted because of being a homosexual.
Erich Ebermeyer, a prominent gay German playwright, had close friends in the government with access to Hitler's wartime records. He quoted them in his diaries.
According to the Führer's military record, which was seen by the former Reich Minister of the Interior, homosexual activities precluded him from promotion to sergeant, despite his bravery in action.
Lots of people did not get promoted in the First World War for hundreds of reasons. My own grandfather did not get promoted because he was caught playing cards on sentry duty.
After Germany's defeat, Hitler returned to Munich, where he eventually entered politics. According to evidence unearthed by Mokhtar, he also began paying young men for sex. General Otto von Lasso was the military commander of Munich after the war and a bitter political enemy of Hitler's. After dinner one night, von Lasso read extracts from Munich Vice Squad dossiers to his young friend Eugen Dahlmann.
Those records dealt with Hitler in the early 20s, searching for young men, taking them with him into his room and spending the night together at his place.
Eugen Dahlmann, a loyal Nazi who served as Hitler's Italian interpreter, quoted the reports in his memoirs, published in Italy.
I, Joseph, was approached by a man who wanted to take me with him to his
room. Michael, 18 years old, met a man who invited me to have a meal with him and, in return for payment, to spend the night with him. An apprentice made the acquaintance of a gentleman who invited me to spend the night with him, and I accepted. The gentleman's name is Adolf Hitler.
Von Lasso's files are not the only source for such accusations. Magnus Hirschfeld himself claimed to possess additional testimonies, at least according to the unpublished memoirs of Hirschfeld's friend Peter Martin Lampel.
Lampel writes that Magnus Hirschfeld has told him about two testimonies of young SA men who said they have slept with Hitler, and they even swore to have done that.
But there's a serious problem. If such files ever existed, the originals have never been found.
I'm quite convinced that there might be several dossiers or documents left.
But many historians scoff at the idea of missing dossiers, a common claim in Hitler studies.
It's very easy for someone to say that his pet theory is confirmed by this dossier, which unfortunately is lost in some safe deposit box.
By 1923, Hitler was the leader of the National Socialists, which he had transformed from a tiny party into a budding mass movement. Attempted a coup against the Bavarian government known as the Beer Hall Putsch. But the rebellion was crushed, and he was sentenced to 5 years in Landsberg prison. There he shared a cell with his close Nazi comrade Rudolf Hess, who was also known in the party as Fräulein Anna.
Hess has always been rumored as a homosexual, and not only by the enemies of the Nazi party, but also by Nazis themselves.
The Landsberg prison governor reprimanded Hitler and Hess for indecency.
To Herr Hitler and Herr Hess, nudity outside the fortress living rooms is not allowed. The proprieties have to be observed everywhere.
What I think is going on here is that the Nazis are, in the heat of the summer, running around with their shirts off. And this is not proper prison dress. The prison warden says, no, I can't have you doing this. I can't have you running around in shirt sleeves when the others are fully clothed. That's my interpretation.
But friends like Ernst Hanstangl later testified that Hitler and Hess were prison lovers.
Hitler's strange, wavering sexuality was activated at Landsberg in the company of Hess.
After serving less than a year of his 5-year sentence, Hitler, shown here on the day of his release from prison, was paroled while Hess remained behind bars.
Ach, my Rudi, my Hesser, isn't it terrible that he's still locked up?
Hess also really adores Adolf Hitler, but I think not in a sexual sense. It's this highly homoerotic relationship that we find throughout the Nazi Party, which I think in this case does not stray over into the sexual.
Hitler, now approaching 40, was urged by his colleagues to marry. He had no shortage of attractive prospects.
He was adored by women, and they did, in my eyes, crazy things. I know that girls wanted to get children to sacrifice the children for Hitler. Impossible thought for me.
Yeah.
He had successes with women in the 1920s, with the female voters in the German Reich. Many women liked him. Women can tell if a man is gay and understand it well. And they would have noticed and talked about it. But there is absolutely no indication by women from the time regarding homosexual practices, feelings or sexual advances. Hitler's attractiveness to women cannot be an argument against Hitler's homosexuality. It is known that women are attracted to homosexuals. Look at the memoirs by Coco Chanel, where she says that homosexuals follow women everywhere except to bed. And statements like that are based on something.
Solche Äußerungen, die kommen ja, wie ich meine, auch nicht von ungefähr.
You show again how little you understand about the way male attraction works. Women did not gravitate towards Hitler as friends. They also found him erotically attractive. They wrote to him. They really idolized him. And that is more than the relationship that we have now, that we think of nowadays, between gays and their closest female friends.
Hitler finally took an interest in a 16-year-old Bavarian shop girl named Mimi Reiter. But the affair turned sour after a walk in the woods.
He hugged me really tightly around the neck. He kissed me. He didn't know what to do. I could feel how he clenched his fists. I could see how he was fighting with himself.
Filmmaker Leni Riefenstahl recorded a similar experience in her memoirs.
The Führer was very awkward with me. I thought he was going to kiss me in the woods, but when I pulled away, he sighed and said, "I cannot love any woman until I have completed my task."
This was followed by a disastrous and reportedly sexless relationship with his own niece, Geli Robal, who committed suicide under mysterious circumstances in 1931. Ultimately, Hitler settled into a strange companionship with this woman, his so-called mistress, Eva Braun.
We had a little boat, and with the boat we went to a completely empty place. And there was a beautiful waterfall, and all the day we were sitting there, reading, talking, swimming.
Many assume that Hitler and Eva were lovers, but there is little evidence they were, and direct testimony that they were not.
Ohne Bedeutung. Ohne Bedeutung. Wir gingen zusammen spazieren zum Teehaus und so. Ganz normaler Ablauf. Nicht auffallend, dass Hitler sie gestreichelt oder. Und das war nicht.
We did spy work back then to see if we could find evidence of sexual relations in their beds. And in all those years, that never happened. The relationship never went that far. Never. That's all I want to say about this private matter.
Every second day he was calling her. But once she asked me, what shall I tell him today? I think if you are in love, you don't need to ask the little cousin. What shall I tell him?
Hitler's lack of affection appears to have devastated Eva, who tried to kill herself.
I think she must have been so unhappy that she tried it twice.
Eva complained to Eugen Dahlmann of her lonely, sexless existence.
People naturally believe that my life at Hitler's side takes quite a different form. If they only knew. Even the thought of physical contact with me would be to him a contamination of his mission. Always the mission, the mission, the mission. Self-sacrifice and renunciation.
Yeah.
Hitler saw himself as married to Germany, and I'm persuaded that basically that was the case. I don't believe that, having sexual intercourse or orgasms was crucially important to him in terms of what he was doing and where he was at. I take him at his word.
For Hitler, his career was always foremost from the early 1920s on. Just like sexuality serves to secure one's personal identity, Hitler assured himself of his own identity, his own ego, through his public success, and then through his political success, and didn't need his sexuality to do that for him.
Mogdan, however, believes differently.
You are talking about Hitler in the 1930s, when the Nazis had their first big success. But by then, he was already 40 years old. Are you trying to say that he was asexual until that time? In the 1920s, all his close comrades reported that he frequently disappeared in a suspicious way, and that he was traveling all the time, and they were all suspicious. So apparently, he did not find fulfillment in his public role alone. If he had, he would not have been fleeing all the time.
Mogdan writes that these often suspicious disappearances happened with male comrades, such as his trusted chauffeur, Julius Schreck.
Hitler was a person who was always driving or cruising around Germany, and he loved to drive in very fast cars.
Once Hitler and Julius Schreck disappeared en route to the family home of famous composer Richard Wagner.
He never came, so everyone was wondering where they stayed. And when Winifred Wagner made a phone call, she found out that Hitler had stayed the weekend with his chauffeur in a hotel.
It was Christmas, and the hotel was officially closed. They were the establishment's only guests. After years of struggle, Hitler was appointed Chancellor of Germany. Mogdan believes that as Hitler moved to consolidate dictatorial power, his active homosexual life came to an end.
When Hitler gained power in 1933, he couldn't be in that way homosexual active as he was before.
Of course, now it's changing the moment he became the Führer. And the moment he had to play the role of the Führer, this kind was also not any longer in the Third Reich acceptable.
But if Hitler's sex life was over, his artistic ambitions were about to explode in a frenzy of art and architectural obsessions that could contain revealing clues about his sexuality.
I can think of no other figure in history that was so obsessed with the arts as with Hitler, who tried to realize his aesthetic ambitions in music, in painting, and above all in architecture. How many American presidents have ever been to an opera? Hitler attended Meistersinger 100 times, Tristan 100 times.
Hitler's obsession with opera reaches back to his teenage years with August Kubitschek. They spent their last Pfennig attending performances of Wagner's operas.
Listening to this blessed music as a young man at the opera at Linz, I had the vision that I, too, must someday succeed in uniting the German Empire and making it great once more.
Wagnerian opera appealed to Hitler for many ideological and artistic reasons. But Mogdan believes these reasons are augmented by another. An obsession with Wagner and Bayreuth, the site of the Wagnerian Opera Festival, was central to the gay life of the era, at least according to Magnus Hirschfeld.
Bayreuth is a rendezvous much favored by homosexuals, some of whom come on their own and some of whom come with their friends.
Hirschfeld was describing what he found in this homosexual milieus. And one of the points he found out was that opera places were really meeting places for homosexuals at that time.
So if about 10% of the visitors to the Bayreuth Festival were known to be homosexual, we can't conclude that everyone who went to Bayreuth was homosexual.
Nein, so ist es ja auch gar nicht gesagt worden.
That wasn't what I said at all. But why then does Hirschfeld think it's worth mentioning? Why was there an entire book from the gay movement of that time that covered the homoerotic appeal of Wagner's music? Contemporaries who observed this must have known what they were talking about. But then your sexual theory is as old as that of Hirschfeld's, almost 100 years old.
Once Hitler became a noted politician in the 1920s, he was only too happy to spend time with Wagner's famous daughter-in-law, Winifred. He saw Winifred and her sons as his adopted family, and their villa, Wahnfried, in Bayreuth, as his spiritual home.
This is a story which my grandmother Winifred always liked to tell me. He entered already to Bayreuth and he presented himself with a card and saying, Wagner is my religion.
Wagner was the only person that Hitler acknowledged to be his mentor and spiritual father.
But Hitler's interests in the Wagners were possibly more than spiritual. He reportedly molested one of Wagner's grandchildren, the son of Siegfried and Winifred Wagner.
Nike Wagner, one of Wieland's daughters, said Wieland war Opfer Hitler's homophile Neigungen, which means that Wieland was victim of Hitler's homoerotic proclivities.
Of course, this is one of the most delicate topics within the Wagner family. Now, this was concealed. This was taboo.
What is peculiar is that Wieland himself could never stand to sit next to another male. He couldn't abide sitting next to a man in a car. Now, whether this has anything to do with the molestation theory, I have no way of knowing.
But Frederick Spaatz decided against including this allegation in his book about Bayreuth.
Salacious facts have a way of getting attention in a way that I think is unfortunate.
Gottfried Wagner vehemently disagrees.
My position is everything is public and has to be discussed out. So put it in your book and have the courage, even by risking to be for a certain time outsider, even the academic world. I know about being an outsider in the academic world when you touch topics like homosexual.
Gottfried Wagner's commitment to revealing the truth has estranged him from his family.
All this hidden, it's all about hidden, you know? It's all about closet, you know, mentality.
Whether Hitler molested the Wagner children or not, he certainly plundered the Wagner legacy. Inspired by the costumes he saw at Wagner's operas, Hitler designed his party's logos, uniforms, and even the pendants used in the parades. Processions and rallies, Wagner's operas marched off the stage and into reality.
There's probably no one more important for Hitler's ideas about art and culture than Richard Wagner. The total work of art, for example, was very important to Hitler. The spectacles, combining all the arts, theater and music, and stage design and pageantry, and that's what he did at Nuremberg to great effect. it's no coincidence that in Triumph of the Will, that the soundtrack that Leni Riefenstahl uses is Wagner. As Hitler arrives in Nuremberg, it's, you know, Die Meistersinger that is playing, and Nuremberg was a very Wagnerian spectacle.
The Triumph of the Will was one of a number of films Hitler commissioned to document himself and his rallies, films saturated with latent homoeroticism.
He hired Leni Riefenstahl to make a film on his army. I mean, can you imagine George Bush hiring Bruce Weber to make a film on his army? You know, she was showing the beauty of the soldier and the army and the pageantry.
And at the center of the Nuremberg spectacles, always Hitler himself.
And when we watch the films there in Nuremberg and how he's carrying on with his whole body and so on, the whole body, like, becomes a phallus, and it's on display, and 100,000 or more are watching him just right there. What I'm suggesting, had he been able to enjoy a private sexual life, he might not have needed the stadium in Nuremberg.
The new Nuremberg Stadium, built in the mid-30s, was designed by Albert Speer. The Führer and the young architect formed an intense, if platonic, bond.
Albert Speer was probably closer to Adolf Hitler than any other individual in the Third Reich. And they bonded over art and architectural issues. I mean, that was their passion. Speer, in his memoirs, described it as a father-son relationship. But I think it was much more complex than that.
Das war sehr, wie soll ich das sagen? Der Speer, das war so zu Hitler, so von mir aus gesehen, so Leonardo da Vinci. Hitler hätte keinen besseren Gesprächspartner haben können wie diesen jungen Architekten.
With Speer at his side, he began to realize his operatic vision, lavishing attention on pet projects, such as massive public buildings. Huddling with Speer, poring over architectural plans, Hitler opened exhibitions packed with massive male statuary, much of it nude. One of his favorite artists was the monumental sculptor Arno Brecker.
These are not normal human beings that you see in the street. His shoulders a little too big, his waist a little too narrow, and they are at the same time, there is a homoerotic element about them.
I think the homoerotic themes emphasize certain points. One is the idea of camaraderie, that males would work together, would fight together, would form close bonds. And the second deals with racial superiority, that these were muscular supermen, and Hitler had an admiration for these pure or these superior racial types. Considering the size, oftentimes they're 20, 40 feet high, the penises aren't as large as one might expect. And one scholar said that this resulted, or this stemmed from a Nazi myth that Jewish men were well endowed. And thus part of the superior Aryan was that they were well proportioned. There is something homoerotic about much Nazi art, and Hitler played a decisive role in creating that aesthetic.
Thank you. Hitler personally oversaw the design of the uniforms that have inspired erotic and sadomasochistic fantasies ever since.
I don't know if it was particularly and wholly a gay aesthetic. I think it was more of an artistic aesthetic. He looked at his whole country as an art piece, and as a very cruel art piece, wiping out what he didn't want, building a master race of blonde men and women, or these Teutonic gods.
But if the new dictator thought he could immerse himself in politics and art and simply close the door on his past, Mochtan believes that as Führer, Hitler was presented with an enormous personal problem, one that was once all too familiar to closeted homosexuals: blackmail.
He was confronted with a long list of persons who knew about his sexual life. So he had to be very careful by, first of all, covering up traces. He still had the problem that some people try to blackmail him.
One, according to Mochtan, was Ernst Röhm, Hitler's most important mentor back in the 1920s. Röhm was now the leader of the private Nazi army known as the SA and the virtual Vice Führer of Germany. He was also openly homosexual among his Nazi comrades.
I fancy I'm homosexual. I'm far from unhappy, perhaps even secretly proud.
This fact was widely known to German gays. Friedrich Paul von Groschheim was a young gay man living in Hamburg.
Dass der Röhm schwul war, das wusste man. Das wusste man. Und Graf Spreti da waren doch noch mehr Lang, oder wie hießen sie? Also die waren doch alle schwul, die waren führende Nazis. Ich glaube sogar, dass da eine Literatur vorhanden war darüber.
Hitler had first met Ernst Röhm back in 1919, when Hitler was unknown and Röhm was the famous leader of the Freikorps, the right wing's shadow army.
Röhm immediately recognized how talented this young man was, so they built up a very close relationship at that time.
Some of Hitler's early support came from the male bonding that went on in the trenches of World War I, particularly Röhm's group, the SA, were people who came out of that tradition.
Was glauben Sie, was für eine Art von Homosexualität in der SA praktiziert wurde?
Mehr auf so Heldentum hin. Also wie die schwuren doch auch so und so. Das wäre da nicht angekommen. Sondern es war mehr diese Homosexualität der Jugendbewegung. Wir dürfen ja die Jugendbewegung nicht aus Jugendbewegung.
The masculine side of gay liberation certainly is a one that's more appealing to the Nazis, and there are gay men who join the stormtroopers in the 1920s.
So what was the nature of the relationship between Hitler and Röhm?
There is no evidence at all that Hitler made sexual advances toward men to obtain his political goals, including Ernst Röhm, who was actually rather unattractive.
Für seine politischen Ziele.
Also da bin ich mit dir ganz anderer Meinung. Also erstmal,
I disagree completely. First of all, Röhm was not unattractive. His wounds were really more like a badge of honor, not necessarily something that made him unattractive. And Hitler could never have managed his career in Munich without Ernst Röhm's support.
Guck dir an, dass es dieser Ernst Röhm gewesen ist, ohne den Hitler nie seine Karriere geschafft hätte in München.
Also Hitler hatte nicht den Ekel.
Hitler did not find homosexuality abhorrent, which is why he could work alongside fight Ernst Röhm and possibly other homosexuals. Because you move in these circles does not make you homosexual. After all, you are in this room here with an openly gay professor who has been publishing a lot of books about homosexuality and other topics for 25 years. But that doesn't make you and others in this room homosexual.
Whatever the relationship between Hitler and Röhm, things changed in 1932, the year before Hitler came to power. Röhm's homosexuality was outed to all Germany when a newspaper published his private letters, waxing nostalgic about the gay pleasures of Berlin.
The steam bath there is, in my opinion, the acme of human happiness. I have a great favor to ask. You once showed me an enchantingly lovely collection of pictures. If you should have one or two little pictures to spare, I'll be eternally grateful to you.
The letters caused a sensation, and party leaders begged Hitler to condemn Röhm's homosexuality. But Hitler did just the opposite.
These attacks are wholly extraneous to the context of their duties in the SA. Their private life cannot be an object of scrutiny unless it runs counter to vital principles of National Socialist ideology.
Many in the gay community were encouraged by Hitler's apparently tolerant attitude.
Das ist das Komische gewesen. Man hat in gewissen Kreisen mehr außen, die haben gesagt, ist gegen die Homosexuellen. Aber wir wussten zu viel von ihm durch die Röhm und so weiter, dass wir das gar nicht so fürchteten. Denn das wussten wir, dass gesagt hat, mir ist es ganz egal, wie jemand lebt.
Hitler's refusal to issue condemnations of homosexuality as they're coming to power and as Ernst Röhm is becoming more powerful derives from the fact that he needs Röhm. He needs the stormtroopers.
But Marton believes that Hitler was defending Röhm, at least in part, because Röhm was threatening to expose the dictator's own homosexual past.
Röhm, who of course knew everything about Adolf Hitler from former years, really tried to blackmail him, telling him, Adolf, you know about our common past, so don't make a mistake.
A few words would have sufficed to silence Hitler had he complained about Röhm's behavior.
Over the years, Hitler's unwavering support of Röhm had encouraged rumors about Hitler's own homosexuality.
Things have now reached the stage where rumors are being spread in Marxist quarters that you yourself, my most esteemed Führer, are also homosexual.
Finally, 18 months after coming to power, Hitler struck.
Röhm schickte die SA auf Urlaub, auf Ferien. Und dann ist Hitler dahin gefahren und hat ihn ja da in seinem Hotelzimmer selber verhaftet.
Richtig.
Ich bin noch ganz klar im Kopf.
As dramatized in Visconti's film, The Damned, Röhm and his lieutenants were relaxing, unawares, at the Bavarian resort of Bad Wiessee when Hitler burst in. Röhm and 150 others were murdered in the Night of the Long Knives.
Of exposing the entire leadership of the party to suspicions of shameful and loathsome sexual abnormality.
But historians argue that Goebbels' accusations were a mere cover-up of the real reason for the massacre.
it's very clear that it's the relationship with the army that is the deciding factor here. Nothing to do with Rome's homosexuality, which is trotted out afterwards as a kind of justification.
But some reports in the exile press claim that the Night of the Long Knives was indeed, at least in part, about covering up Hitler's own homosexuality.
Hitler has eliminated initiates who have become dangerous, those privy not least to the private life of the Führer, who is himself homosexual.
Mokhtan believes that this explains why some died and not others. Karl Zehnter was the innkeeper of the Bratwurstglockel in Munich.
In this very room, Ernst Röhm and his intimate friends used to meet, and they used to have some beer parties inside this restaurant. And of course, sometimes Adolf Hitler used to join them. And there was a keeper of this restaurant called Karl Zehnter, who served them. And he, of course, was hearing everything those men were talking about.
Zehnter always privately waited on his powerful guests. And so Mokhtan believes he simply knew too much about Hitler's private life.
Karl Zehnter was not political at all. He, of course, heard a lot of gossip. And that, in my eyes, was the only reason that a person who was not political at all was killed.
Mokhtan has been criticized for attributing the Rome massacre to homosexual blackmail, when in fact the affair had many roots. But Mokhtan insists he is not rewriting history, just adding a previously overlooked element.
What I'm trying to add is a dimension of that conflict that has not been taken into account so far.
Mokhtan maintains that this marked the beginning of Hitler's ruthless campaign to cover up his own past.
So many documents and so many papers were taken away from private persons, but there was never an attempt to have some kind of public trial. All this material was taken to Hitler, and he could decide what to do with it. And you can be very sure that he destroyed most of it.
Gay bars had already been closed and Hirschfeld's Institute destroyed several months before the Night of the Long Knives. The famous images of Nazi book burnings derive from this event. But shortly after the Rome massacre, the Nazis launched an unprecedented campaign to entirely wipe out Germany's homosexual milieu. Tens of thousands were arrested, and a nightmare descended on the formerly vibrant gay world.
Ja, da waren wir in Angst. Wir aber zusammenhalten müssen wir. Wir sahen da plötzlich die große Gefahr.
The persecution of gay men by the Nazis pretty much destroys the homosexual emancipation movement.
Oddly, Hitler himself took a back seat.
The driving force behind all this was not Hitler himself, but it was Himmler, who was very frightened, really personally frightened, that homosexuality could undermine his SS man and cause a lot of trouble.
Eventually, well into the war, Himmler persuaded Hitler to issue a decree.
In order to keep the SS clean from parasites of a homosexual disposition, I order a member of the SS who commits indecency with another man shall be put to death.
But Hitler remained so concerned about the public image that either he or his stormtroopers might be gay that he kept the edict a secret.
Hitler spoils this at the moment he signs the decree by saying to those around him, well, we must never publish this. It must remain a secret decree, because if this is made public, our enemies, this is during the war, our enemies will believe that we have a particular problem with homosexuality. The head of his chancellery, Hans Heinrich Lammers, said, well, mein Führer, how are we going to have this as a deterrent if people don't know about it?
To Machtan, this is consistent with a Hitler who wasn't particularly homophobic, but who went along with the gay persecutions instigated by his commanders for his own personal reasons, to intimidate the gay world and silence the recurring rumors about his hidden past.
Hitler's plan was not to eliminate homosexuality from the Nazi movement in general, but he was very eager to find everything that could be dangerous for him.
It ultimately proved to be the most vicious anti-homosexual purge in history.
Hitler! Sieg Heil!
An estimated 100,000 investigations, 50,000 court cases, and between 5,000 and 15,000 sent to concentration camps like Mauthausen, from which few emerged.
Mauthausen was a very, very difficult place for homosexuals. They were forced into the hardest labor they could find. And so out of the homosexuals brought to the camps, the ratio of those who survived is one of the lowest compared to other groups.
Von Groschheim escaped Mauthausen, but at a horrible price.
Das war ganz furchtbar. So haben sie mich einfach auf der Straße und dann haben sie mich verschleppt, haben sie. Sie haben nicht mal zu Hause bei uns Bescheid gesagt. Meine Tanten glaubten, ich hätte mich selber umgebracht. Ich hatte nichts gemacht. Dann verlangt, dass ich mich kastrieren lassen musste. Ich habe so leiden müssen unter dieser ganzen Sache. Ganz furchtbar.
The full extent of the gay persecution will never be known.
There are very few survivors who have come forward because of the continued stigmatization of homosexual offenses.
After the war, many of the homosexuals who survived the concentration camps were re-imprisoned.
If their sentences had not been served fully, they were resent to the same jail, now under a democratic rule, and had to serve their Nazi term.
The victims weren't even officially recognized by the German government until 2002.
They did not get any compensation. They were not talked about publicly. They were simply, they were criminals all the time.
Homophobia continues to this day, even prejudicing the study of gay history and the homosexuality of historic figures.
There's a resistance among mainstream straight historians to the whole existence of gay and lesbian studies, or gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered studies. They don't think it's a significant enterprise, and they don't follow the scholarship at all.
Could this attitude have helped to obscure interest in Hitler's possible homosexuality, or even covered it up?
I mean, there's still that sense that when you say that someone's gay, you are revealing something about them that shouldn't be revealed.
Combating this attitude, modern gay scholars routinely explore the homosexual orientation of historical figures, including homosexuals like J. Edgar Hoover and Roy Cohn, whose public actions were decidedly anti-gay.
Knowing about the sexual orientation of historical figures is important for everybody. I think the thing that we'd want is that it be on a level playing field, that it be taken as part of a constellation of attributes in someone's life.
But there's no welcome mat out in the gay world for anyone raising the topic of Hitler's possible homosexuality.
It was widely criticized as not being very good. Why are we
discussing this question at this level, at this time, and in even this documentary.
It's hard for many people not to be defensive. It plays into every stereotype that already pre-exists. Because the reality is, most people don't understand homosexuality. It's foreign to them. And if they can find something to hook on to explaining it, to explain their discomfort, to explain their unease with it, they will. It really functions as a form of cultural shorthand. Nazis are evil. Who else is evil? Well, homosexuals are evil.
Can Hitler ever be explained? Perhaps it's foolish or immoral to even try.
There's a desire to feel that, that's it, eureka, we've got Hitler figured out. We don't have to be concerned about the mysteries of human nature, the origins of evil. It's really easy to explain. He was a repressed homosexual, that's it, end of story, we can forget about it.
As death and destruction rained down around him, Hitler retreated to a fantasy world dominated by his first and longest love, art.
As the Red Army was advancing and bombs were raining on the bunker in the Reichschancellery, he would retreat to the so-called bunker room, where he had a model of the Linz Project with the Führer Museum as the center, and he would spend hours there fantasizing about his art museum.
Died as he lived, lying and covering up. In the final days in the bunker, his loyal followers raced to burn any remaining documents that might shed light on the enigma of the Führer.
He had to make disappear, destroy all the traces, as we know, before he burned himself, in the style of Richard Wagner's The Twilight of the Gods, and of death by fire. You can even hear the funeral march, this again stage directing himself, even his death. No? So all these documents had to disappear.
The day before he committed suicide, Hitler married Eva Braun, and then escaped with his bride and his secrets into the flames of history. Today, the site of his bunker sits unmarked in an apartment courtyard in Berlin. When the area was redeveloped after the Berlin Wall came down, Germans debated whether to excavate it and uncover its secrets. They decided to leave it alone.
Significant achievements in the past 40 years. At first, just a vision, a dream. Then the dream exploded into a possibility. It didn't come easy. Years of testing, probing, one failure, then another. Cost wasn't considered. And then, after 40 long years, success came at last. Today, we proudly announce a dream come true. It is with no little pride that we give you a conundrum that glows in the dark.
Top of the hour on the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn presents
It Sucks to Be Right
with comedian Tara Devlin from RepublicanDirtyTricks.com and comedian Sherry D. Sutton. In Switzerland.
Where we have no real microphone technology.
Right, so we apologize. And
please, best we can.
Support Progressive Voices, and maybe we'll one day be in a studio.
Maybe we'll get two brothers that will give us some money.
Right, really. I mean, this whole elections is so disgusting. You know what you know who I can't stand the most? Ted Cruz is the worst.
Oh, number one. Yeah, he's frightening.
Everything about him is so vile. Even his daughter. Did you see his daughter like, flicking at him? She hates him, too. But you know how children are. They can read people. I love that his roommate from college, who's actually a screenwriter now, who wrote The Hangover, says that his hatred for Ted Cruz isn't political. That if he agreed with Ted Cruz on 100% of his politics, he'd hate him about 1% less.
That's hilarious.
Google Ted Cruz's college roommate. It's really funny. His religiosity, he loves to torture, but he is so into Jesus. But he definitely has the racist, redneck, white trash vote locked up, right?
Now, I need to clarify something for you. Because you're kind of talking about my people, and you've lumped them into two things. And there's a difference between redneck and white trash.
Well, you have to explain, Sherry. Being from the South, you need to tell me these things.
I will. Because, see, rednecks aren't necessarily racist bigots, but white trash people are. We can trace that all the way back to the Bible. You want to get some Christian white trash stories? The Bible's got, I'll give you one of them, all right? It's in Genesis, I believe, in like chapter 19. And this is right after Sodom and Gomorrah was burnt down, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Lot escaped with his two daughters, because his wife got turned into a pillar of salt. And they escaped Sodom and Gomorrah, and they're living in a cave, and Lot's asleep. And the oldest daughter says to her younger sister, our father is old, and there is no man to lie with us as is custom all over the earth. Let's get our father drunk with wine, and then lie with him to preserve our family line through our father. Because I ain't screwing no foreigner, that's a sin.
Right. That would be disgusting.
That's white trash. That's white trash. See, people think that it was Harriet Beecher Stowe, the author, you know, of Uncle Tom's Cabin, that kind of clarified what white trash was for, because she said not only did slavery, like, produce degraded, miserable slaves, but it also produced poor whites who were even more degraded and miserable.
Mm.
And that both blacks and whites looked down on poor white trash. And I cannot imagine how degraded you'd have to be to feel worse off than a slave.
Really?
That's got to be something. I mean, because I watched the entire miniseries of Roots in the 1970s,
mm-hmm.
and I don't ever remember a moment when Kunta Kinte looked over at Miss Kizzy and was like, whoa, Miss Kizzy, life sure is hot. I got beat by massa today, now we eating cornbread and chitlins for the seventh time this week. But thank the Lordy, we ain't as bad off as them crackers down the road. See, I'll give it to you really quickly, okay? Because you know Jeff Foxworthy pretty much allowed us to get an understanding of what a redneck is. And that's
mm-hmm.
the first cousin of white trash, right? But they're not the same. And I know it's confusing for people like you Yankees when you see us all gathered at a NASCAR race or a truck pool.
True.
Right? It's hard to tell the difference. We got the same trashy clothes. We got 1980s hairstyles. And we all have movable living quarters. I'm going to shed a little bit of light on you about the group commonly referred to as white trash with some little humor that I call hilarious and terrifying. I just like to call that hilarifying. Now I'm going to do my own Foxworthy style humor for you just so you and the listeners can get a better understanding.
Okay. Right?
Redneck, if you've ever shot someone. White trash, if you've ever shot someone in your own family. Redneck, usually reads trashy tabloid magazines. White trash? Can't. Redneck wears a Confederate flag because his great-great-grandpappy fought in the Civil War. White trash wears a Confederate flag because
We hate black people.
Well, that clears it up.
That's my family. Those are the people, like, see, my family are mostly rednecks that married into white trash. They think rednecks are uppity and snooty.
Well, that's like the southern version of Modern Family, right?
And their mother-in-law gave her a bag of weed as a wedding gift.
And these are all true stories, too.
Now, see, here's the thing. Now, I did a show, right, called Taking Out the White Trash, but I got a theater critic who reviewed me. His name is Colin McLean, and he gave the review, and I ended up with this white supremacy group called Stormfront,
mm-hmm.
who got very angry about the fact that I had referred to myself as white trash, and they didn't like Colin for agreeing with me. Actually, I didn't like Colin for agreeing with me, but that's totally different. And the thing is, Karen, I guess I'll end it with this, is that these are the yep. people that are out there getting behind these candidates. This is why we've got to stay progressive. So listen, this has been Sherry D. Sutton and Tara Devlin for It Sucks to Be Right. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and keep listening for more on the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn.
We stick together, we win.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
It's our news sack.